Kol HaLashon, the entire Torah, everywhere.
Hi everybody, welcome to Coach Menachem Bernfeld. Thank you for joining us here tonight on this beautiful Sunday night. We just moved back the clock, so everybody's so well rested because they got a good night's sleep. Tonight is Shiur 207. I want to first thank everybody for coming on every week and for promoting it. I'm letting people know about it, promoting on their WhatsApp statuses. Like I say every week, please join us. If it's not for you, let people know about it. You never know who can need it. You never know which program talks to people. And we're really here to have deep conversations, important topics. We bring on the best rabbis, the best therapists, the best personal trainers, the best nutritionists. We bring the best of the best. We cover everything. So this is a whole new field, but we're going to cover it. Again, if anyone wants to join our WhatsApp communities, you could WhatsApp me at 732-314-1710. I'll send you the community link. You could join it, and I'll also post it in the Zoom chat shortly. If you want to go to MenachemMerenfeld.com, you could sign up for his emails. Every week he sends out an email of the speakers, the upcoming speakers, the replays. So please go to MenachemMerenfeld.com and sign up for the flyers every week. Everybody's watching this video, the replay on YouTube, click on the subscribe buttons every week. When Menachem uploads the videos, you get to watch them. And also click on the like button. So Don, me and Menachem, we get enough likes, we could retire and make millions of dollars. That's really the goal, what we're trying over here. So like us, thumbs up. Thank you to all the advertising tier sponsors here in Lakewood. Lakewood Scoop here for promoting us. Ellie and Ariel from 5Town Central. And Chayla Kaufman from JCN. Jewish Content Network for always promoting us on all the digital platforms. Again, if anybody's here the first time, every Sunday night, 9:30 Eastern Time, on the Zoom ID, we have different programs, different shiurim. Please spread the word. Mashem, next week, November 10th, we're going to have an amazing program. The details have not been finalized. I know that's been going on for a while because we've been a little tied up between all the holidays, but hopefully we'll have more of a clear confirmed, but it should be an amazing program. And you know how I know it's going to be an amazing program, Menachem? Because it's always an amazing program. That's the reason. So why shouldn't it be? So tonight's year is 207. We're going to start first with a gematria. I want to see, Ellie, if it's a good gematria, if it goes well with the thing. We have our COO, Arnoyach, free to give the gematria of 207.
Shalom Avrach, everyone, to Zoom share number 207. The struggle is real. Weight and exercise definitely takes a large step in the right direction and a large commitment, which leads us up for tonight's gematria of 207, Tzad, Tzadik Ayin Dalad Godoil, which equals 207, which means a large step.
Large step.
Yeah.
So we're going to all take the large step together tonight. Okay, thank you for the gematria. So we're going to turn it over now to Coach Menachem Bernfeld. It's Sunday night. It's getting a little chilly. It's dark already. I'm a little tired. Why are we here? 9:30 at night.
Yes, thank you so much. Welcome, everyone, to another Let's Get Real with Coach Menachem. Tonight we're doing number 207, and it's a little bit different. So we're having Ellie with Don. I've been in many classes with Don. He put me to work. Oh, yeah, we'll hear about it soon. And Ellie, many people in shul talk about Ellie, and you just look at them like, wow, who do you talk to? And when they tell me about Ellie Glazer, they say, it's about mindset. And for me, that belongs on this program. We're all about mental health, understanding how we work, and a lot of it boils down to the mind. Healthy body, healthy mind. We all know how we feel when we don't feel that good. Like hard to function, talking about myself when I'm not, you know, when that's in full strength, you can't talk to me. You know, you got to be healthy, feeling good so you can continue and go on. So tonight we're going to start this conversation, but it's important to understand that
Kol HaLashon.
Obviously a balance. We're not focusing only on the body, but it's part of us. Hashem gave us a body. And we have a tachlis, we want a lot of ishtadlis, which we'll hear soon. We're here for a reason. And we have to do it with our body. And that's part of it. Talking about healthy mind, healthy body, healthy spirit, it all goes together. So for those who think it's not so important and are probably not here tonight to listen to this, you know, hopefully one day they'll understand that it's all one. But many, then there are others that it's a big struggle. It could be a big struggle. It says in the pasuk, "Nishmartem ma'oid l'nafshaseichem." "Nishmartem ma'oid." Ma'oid means not just you know, make sure you're healthy. It's ma'oid. You really have to, you know, take care of yourself. And it's a mitzvah to take care of ourselves. And it's part of this. This is what we got to do. We live in a world which, if you can give us a pill, just give me something, a supplement, a pill, and much easier. We don't want to move, you know, why move? You go from the couch to the car to the chair at work and then back to the couch. And what do you expect? What's going to happen? So, yeah, if you can have a pill that can help us, you know, that's what we want. But to get out there, do the hard work, whether it's running, whether exercise, we're going to hear a lot about. Not always is it easy, but I could tell you there's a certain feeling afterwards that you can't describe. You got to try it out. While you're doing the work, it could be hard. And that's why you have to have a good instructor like Don, who he knows when to and how to. And when you come out of there, you're like, oh man, I didn't believe I can do that. And, it's just amazing. One more thing before we start. Talking about emotional health. Emotions is also something that moves in our body. We have those feelings, positive, negatives, ups and downs, all different types of emotion. The past many years, we live in a world which is not accepted to show your emotions. So, you know, you walk straight, you're always with your jacket, you know, you come into shul, everything is okay, everything is great. Part of a healthy emotion is you need to have your body move a little bit. You need some movement for emotional health, to get things to move, come and go, let it out, in and out, breath work. You know, your body, there has to be movement. I'm not even talking about boot camp. I'm not even talking about the heavy stuff. Even the basic, a little bit of stretching, maybe yoga will hit tonight if that's enough. But you need to get the body to move. If you don't move, obviously there's a lot of things stuck. And whether it's physical, emotional, things stay in your body. And then before you know it, it knocks on your door and you feel it. And then we got to go for help. I'm trying to figure it out. The doctor, nutritionist. So I'm excited to start the conversation. We're going to hear a little bit from those people who deal with it all day, Don and Ellie. And hopefully with Siyata Deshmaya, Hashem should help us for those who need it. And it is a struggle. For many, it's a struggle. Nothing to talk about. Not easy. But hopefully tonight we'll come up with some tips, some ideas that we can start the process, get onto that right track and feel better, feel accomplished. And most important, you'll feel great with that self-control. Amen, Hashem.
Thank you, Coach Menachem. Beautiful, beautiful opening. Okay, let's get into it. Again, tonight's program, we have Ellie Glazer and Don with us. The title of it, The Struggle is Real, Weight and Exercise, Getting Healthy, tuning into our body, eating mindfully, healthy, and finding the motivation to get moving. So that's the way we titled it. We'll just get into it before we start. Don is going to open it up with his opening, and then we'll pass it on to Ellie, and then we'll get into the questions. So a little background over here is that me and Menachem, as we're getting older, we just got into health last while, and I did a lot of research and a lot of things. You know, there's a big mental health component that, of course, everybody knows it, like logically, you know, the endorphins and working out, blah, 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 and all that stuff. But I've been doing it the last few months, and I just feel like after my personal exercise that I'm doing, the endorphins that I feel are just so powerful, and they're like, it's like a trip in its own, you know what I mean? So it's something that it's really tied into your mental health. You could be just having a really hard day, and I sometimes exercise in the afternoon, and then I go back to my computer, and it's just like a whole different ballgame. It's like, you can't even compare. It's like the best shot of something that you could do. So that's amazing, and nothing to talk about. You know, you eat a tremendous amount and, you know, you can exercise a lot, but you're not really going to burn the weight. So you need a healthy diet. You need good exercise. And this is something that goes so much more deeper in the looking and the skinny and looking good and fitting into suit. That's just a side effect that gives us a little bit of that, you know, false drive to do it. But really it gets tied into so much more functionality of our brains, of our happiness, people around you, and diabetes, cholesterol, heart disease, cancer. It's like, you know, as we're getting older, people are starting to get the side effects of all these things. And like yeah, you're eating whatever you want all the years, but you're gonna pay that price. And when you pay that price, you're like, huh? I'm shocked. I'm a borderline diabetic. I'm shocked I have a heart problem. I'm shocked that you just didn't do nothing about it all the years. So we wait. There's got to be a time where we're like hit that reality that we've got to do something about it. Okay. So again, I'm not here to promote anybody or anything, but let's live in the reality. We're living out of control. People are eating 24/7, 32 meals a day, a Shabbos food that has 17 courses, right? Sourdough challah is healthy, so you could have at least 3 or 4 of those. I mean, from Kiddush to Kiddush to Kiddush, then another meal, then a challah shodos. Don, it's out of control, right? You know that. Don knows everything about our circles. He's been working in our community for many, many years, 10 plus years. He knows all the lines. So I'm going to read his bio. I'm going to pass it over to him, but really want to, really get into it tonight. So feel free to be part of it. Okay. Don earned his bachelor's in science degree in chemistry at Drexel University in 2022, completed his master's degree in exercise and science from Liberty University in 2012, became a certified personal trainer through the National Association of Conditioning Association, NSCA. His health and fitness journey began 12 years ago. At 12 years old, when his brother invited him to a local gym, he discovered his passion for weight training, his love for his bodybuilding. He's completed as a national bodybuilder at a national level in 2012. He decided to pursue a full-time career in health and fitness by opening Pinnacle Fitness and Nutrition. Since then, he's developed a full-fledged service company that offers personal training, fitness classes, nutrition in the gym environment, at home or virtually. Our vision is results. His mission is to exercise, find, supply to the Pinnacle Fit program, custom for each client. I just know from the few people that when I posted it was very last minute, we put together Thursday night. Everybody like, Don is the best. Don is the blah. So he's here tonight. His main focus is just general exercise and the health part of it. Ellie's more on the food part and other, it's mixed together, but that's why he's here. Don, the floor is yours. Open it up. I'll start lifting weights while you talk.
Well, sure. I mean, thank you so much for the intro. And Coach Malcolm, Ellie, it's an honor to be here with you all. And look, 10 years ago, I jumped onto the Lakewood scene, not realizing and not knowing what I was getting into. But 10 years later, it's amazing just to see the vast clients that I've trained throughout the years really get results in what they're looking to aim for. And this is just a great podcast tonight that talks more about weight training. It really ties it into, just like Asher said, about the values and the benefits of mental health and what happens when you actually exercise, the endorphins that get released. And at the end of the day, I think all of us have goals that we want to try to attain, whether it be physical, whether it be mental, whether it be weight loss, whether it be stress relief, whether it be injury prevention. Coming from a background of training and fitness, it's amazing what exercise and physical activity can do to help benefit all these areas of challenges that everyone goes through. But it does tie into just really the tree of what happens when you work out and the benefits of it and the mental aspect, and to incorporate nutrition, which sure Ellie is going to jump into, and how this really can help one's body holistically. So I've seen a lot of clients throughout the years, and just with talking to Asher and Coach Menachem and Ellie, I'm just coming off from a major holiday here, which I had briefly just still trying to absorb the fact that one of my clients mentioned that it's 16 plus Thanksgiving meals. And for me, having a Thanksgiving meal is something that takes a few days to just recover from. I can imagine having 16 meals in the course of 8 days, how long that takes to recover from. So from a health standpoint, just putting any level of physical activity, whether it be cardio, whether it be weight training, whether it be stretching, whether it be walking, any of these modalities can benefit each and every individual in so many ways. And I think at the end of the day, as we get older, like Asher said, we're looking to try to be healthier. And it's one of those things where a mentor of mine said, if you don't take care of your body now, sooner or later, you're going to have to take care of your body one way or another. So it's never too late to jump in. It's never too late to start physical activity, to start exercising. I've trained clients in this community as young as 6 years old to as late as mid 80s. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing a client that I'm training tomorrow who is a Holocaust survivor, which is amazing to be able to see so many different walks of life and so many different avenues and challenges that most clients have, and to be able to incorporate exercise in this to just be that avenue to help them reach the goals that they're looking for. It's an honor. It's an honor. So I'm looking forward to this podcast, and Usher, thank you again for inviting me.
Thank you. Thank you for agreeing to come on last minute. Okay, let's jump into it. Ellie, you ready? Let's go. Ellie Glazer, a bunch of titles, is the founder, the director of Surveya. He's a dual certified as a nutrition and wellness consultant, as weight manager specialist, and has been maintaining a 130-pound weight. Ellie, 130 is my left side, by the way. For more than 15 years. As a coach and a consultant, he's worked personally with thousands of people around the world, helping them achieve their weight loss goals and lifestyle changes. He's an internationally acclaimed motivational speaker and author, have been featured on various multimedia platforms such as CNN, NPR, H.com, Mishpacha Magazine, Bina, Hamadiyah, and the most famous, Coach Menachem. Ellie has developed and mastered the groundbreaking Surveya weight loss program, and Olakab's life-changing program, which empowers a vision to acquire competence and confidence to completely transform their overall eating habits and relationship with food, giving them the ability to not just lose weight, but maintain a healthy body size, which is a big, big thing we're going to talk about tonight. Surveya's 7 keys for long life change is a highly effective system to specific strategy, enable a person to break through their previous blocks and overcome the unique obstacles that have been holding them back for so long. Through his own compelling story and struggles, Ellie deals with this sensitive subject in a disarming and non-judgmental manner, making individuals and audience feel comfortable and committed. At the same time, his unique communicative and intuitive skill set, penetrating and transformative. Ellie is available for presentation, seminars, and he's here on Coach Menachem. Ellie is also a rabbi, by the way. Side note, if you don't want to hire him as a nutritionist, you could hire him as your local rabbi. Having spent more than 20 years in the field of outreach and education, rabbinical counseling, Ellie was a journalist and a sports writer, working at the Washington Post, the Baltimore Sun, and the Charlotte Observer, as well as serving as a war correspondent during Operation Desert Storm in 1991. Ellie, it sounds like you did it all. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Usher. It's an honor to be here with you, with Coach Menachem and Don. Appreciate the opportunity. So as Usher said, I couldn't have articulated better myself. I'm Ellie Glazer. I'm a survivor of morbid obesity. And I don't use that flippantly. As we know, the last 22 years, obesity is a close second to smoking as the number one cause for preventative death in the United States today. Almost 300,000 people die yearly directly because of obesity. We know heart disease, diabetes, many forms of cancer, as well as chronic medical conditions and symptoms are all caused because of our lifestyle and our eating. So for many years, I rode the weight loss roller coaster up and down. I was a hardcore eater. I was a fresher. I've never turned down a piece of cake, but I was really more into meat and potatoes. buffets, all you can eat, Shabbos, Kedashim. What was my favorite appliance? The barbecue grill. We would go through 3 propane canisters in a summer. Because it was just an excuse to eat as much as I can. And I tried to lose the weight, and I lost weight, but I always put it back on, and I did Atkins, and I did all different kinds of different weight loss programs, did diet pills. You know, the amphetamines never really made me lose weight, just made me eat faster. Until 22 years ago, someone shared these 12 words that changed my life. They said, Ellie, you don't have a weight problem, you have a food problem. Say, what does that mean? I'm morbidly obese. My BMI is 42. I'm 5'11". I weigh 300 pounds. What do you mean I don't have a weight problem? He says, no, you have a food problem. You have a dysfunctional, unhealthy relationship with food. And a consequence of that, a serious and deadly consequence of that, is weight gain. So you have to stop focusing on trying to change your body size and start focusing on changing yourself and your relationship with food. And from that was really the jumping off point for me to begin a program of, you know, recovery from compulsive eating and working with individuals, working in a group, and learning and really kind of making a wholesale change in the way I looked at self-indulgence and started defining the terms. Have we, any of us ever thought to ask the question, what's the function of food? Why did the Kaddish Baruch Hu create food? What's its purpose? And we can answer that very simply. If you have Reuven stuck on a desert island and he's got all the air and sunshine he can breathe and he can enjoy, but he's got no food, what's going to happen to him? He's going to die. So we understand that food is the fundamental role in health. Nutrition is the fundamental way that we take care of ourselves. So all of health, as Usher was explaining very poignantly in the introduction, is based on our relationship with food. So therefore, if a relationship with food is for health, is to survive and to thrive, to allow me to fuel myself, I'd say, well, how do I do that? I knew how to indulge myself with food. I knew how to reward myself with food. I knew how to comfort myself with food. But did I know how to nourish myself with food? No, I didn't. So I had to learn that as well. I needed a responsible food plan, which was the Sol Meira and the Asay Tov, not just eliminating the foods that were, you know, causing me to gain weight and have inflammation, you know, the sugar and refined carbohydrates, which we'll go into, but the Asay Tov, what did I need to eat? Right? But not only that, but when did I need to eat and how much? Having a plan, having a GPS from Moda Ani to Krishma Shomita, from sunrise to sunset. But when I wake up, till I put my head on the pillow at night, what did I need to eat? How was I supposed to nourish myself robustly? Not to starve myself, not to undernourish myself, not to malnourish myself, not to starve myself. And quite frankly, over the last 2 decades, since thank God I lost the 130 pounds and, you know, came into this profession, kind of synthesizing the different aspects of my life in communication, in being a journalist, and in teaching and, you know, in being in outreach, and my own personal experience. I got my clinical education as a certified nutritionist and a weight management specialist. So, you know, I'm created the organization survey, which means we have a bracha when we eat to sevia, which means to satisfy ourselves, not to overindulge ourselves. And had the wonderful privilege of working, like I said, you know, with thousands of people, you know, around the world over the 2 decades, got a best-selling book, you know, have the platform that I have. But the greatest credibility, quite frankly, that I have with all of my clients and the people I speak to is not the fact that I lost 130 pounds, but that I kept it off for these 2 decades. Without starvation, without surgery, without supplements, even Ozempic. And I'm not any smarter than anybody. I'm not any, you know, my wife can certainly will attest to that. I don't have any greater strength or personal self-control. I really don't. I'm not saying that to be self-aggrandizing. I don't. So what is it? Is I was willing to change my relationship with it, to become a Baal Tshuva in my relationship with food. And we all have that capacity. Whether you're a Baal Tshuva or you're from birth, we all can make these changes. We can all reprioritize the way we look at ourselves and look at food. Because I'm going to let you out in secret, guys and gals. Your environment, your external environment is not going to change. Your family's not going to go away. Your kids are not going to stop, you know, handling you. The Yom Tovim and Hanukkah is going to be coming up and all the triggers and the Kedeshim and the Simchas that we have. And Baruch Hashem, we don't want them to change. So we can't change our internal environment. What we can change is how we relate to ourselves and prioritize our self-care and self-love and self-health through proper nourishment. And that's the first step to making the sea change. I'm looking forward to really, you know, unpacking these ideas as we go forward.
Okay. Thank you guys. Let's get into it tonight. Again, we have the best of the best here tonight. So any questions regarding general health, physical health, dieting, again, let's not get very specific for your thing, but you know, we could ask more general because I don't think we could really, you know, make somebody a diet plan and give them an exercise plan on tonight's program, but we can get some general real concepts and really understand the benefits of all the stuff. We're going to start off with a 5-question poll tonight. Menachem went wild with the polls. And we're going to get everybody's answers. Please answer honestly so we can get a feeling from the crowd and take it from there. 5 questions. Here we go. Question number 1. When you feel stressed or low, which of the following choices do you make to improve your mood? What do you actually do? You eat comforting foods, sweets, chips, chocolate. Number 2, going for a walk or doing some form of exercise. Number 3, distracting yourself with a show or social media. Or number 4, talking to friends or family members. So what do you do when you're feeling a little bit depressed or low? How do you, you know, what's your natural? Even if you don't even think about it, try to think what you do when you feel like that. Number 2, how do you perceive the relationship between your diet and your mental health? Diet only. What I eat doesn't affect how I feel mentally. I think diet might play a small role, but mostly about lifestyle and mindset. Or number 3, I believe diet has a significant impact on my mood and my energy. Question number 3. Which of the following best describes your approach to exercise and its effect on mental well-being? So first one was diet and mental well-being. Second one is exercise. I don't believe exercise significantly affects my mental health. I exercise sometimes and I feel it might help my mood a little. Or number 3, I exercise regularly and notice a positive impact on my mental well-being. Question number 4. Do you believe that 30 minutes of daily exercise can lower your cholesterol, reduce blood sugar, and lower the risk of certain cancers? Do you believe that? Yes, I strongly believe it can. Yes, but only with a balanced diet. Or option 3, no, I don't believe this has much impact at all. Last question, question number 5. Being honest with yourself, what is the main reason you're not on a balanced diet or exercising 30 minutes a day? Bottom line, why are you not doing it? Number 1, I don't have enough time in my schedule. Number 2, I struggle with my motivation or staying consistent. Number 3, I'm not sure where to start or what's effective. Or number 4, it costs too much money. So those are the 5 questions. I'll give you a few seconds to answer it. Then we'll review the questions with Don and Ellie. And again, if anyone wants to ask a live question, please text Asher Parnas here. Live questions go first. Let's get to it. Okay. 3 seconds. 2. 1. Very interesting. Okay. Here we go. Don, Ellie. When you feel stressed out or low, which of the following choices do you make to improve your mood? 43% of people do some sweet food, chips, chocolate. So most people here are saying when they're feeling a little depressed, they hit the food. 16% go for a walk or do some type of exercise. 21% distract themselves with a show. 20% talk to a friend. So basically, more than double the people, like double, more percentage-wise, more double people. So we're all being honest. When we get a little down, we open the chips, we hit the chocolate. So we're all on the same page with that. Number 2, how do you perceive the relationship between your diet and your mental health? 3%, what I eat doesn't affect how I feel emotionally. 28%, I think diet might play a small role, but mostly about lifestyle mindset. And a whopping 69% of people here tonight, I believe diet has a significant impact on my mood and energy. Number 3, which of the following best describes your approach to exercise and its effect on your mental well-being? This is exercise. 9%, I don't believe exercise significantly affects my mental health. 51% believe that it affects it a little, while 40% believe it makes a positive impact on my mental well-being. So, Don, 51% people believe that it helps a little bit, but it's not like if you're really down, exercise is not going to really get you out of it. It might feel, a little good.
Number 4. It depends on the exercise, I guess.
Number 4, do you believe that 30 minutes of daily exercise can lower the risk of cholesterol, can lower cholesterol, reduce blood sugar, and lower the risk of certain cancers? 42% of people, I strongly believe that. 54%, yes, but only with a balanced diet. 4%, no, I don't believe it has much impact. Last question, the number 1 million-dollar question for every single person. Being honest with yourself, what is the main reason you are not on a balanced diet or eating or exercising 30 minutes daily? 13% of people, I don't have enough time in my schedule. 73%. You ready? Ellie, this is Don. This is what we're going to focus on tonight. I struggle with motivation or staying consistent. 8%, I'm not sure what's effective. 6%, it costs too much money. So that's the answers. I would like to turn to Don first on any of these questions, any comments or something from the Pinot Gallery.
Yeah. I mean, the last one right there is probably one of the main reasons why people hire me as a trainer. Because they don't have the motivation. They don't have the drive to want to be able to do it, but they know that they need to do it. And I think that's the key right here. You know, there's one word that I learned from this community that a lot of my clients like to tell me is that, it takes work, or there's avoda that's required when it comes to working out. You can't just wake up one day and say, oh, wow, I'm going to be healthy. I'm just going to sit on my couch. And then before you know it, I look like the $1 million man or $1 million lady. It does take work. But with work come so many positive benefits that come along with it. You know, the hardest part is getting started. And I think once you start seeing benefits with the exercise, even with the nutrition, I'm sure Ellie's going to go into it more deeply, and also with the mental benefits of it, then that motivation becomes sort of just that spinning wheel. And really the key is, and I tell a lot of my trainers, is that, you know, there's a reason why we have on my shirt the mission or the vision of our company. And that's results. You know, you have to aim to gain some sort of results in what you're trying to do. Because if you don't see any outcome at the end of the day, you're going to lose the motivation pretty quickly. But I do have to say that the probably number one reason why people hire us as trainers is that they know they need to be healthy. They don't sometimes know how to get started, or usually they're just losing that motivation. They don't have that willpower motivation to get them going. So I do agree with that, for the last one being the highest percentage.
Ellie, any comments on the five poles?
Sure. I like to address the first and the last. Really, it's the three H's and the four P's. It's a chapter in my book called "You Got to Learn to Face Your Stuff, Not Stuff Your Face." It's called Breaking the Bonds of Emotional Eating. We all have triggers. We all have challenges, right? And we turn to food. It's natural. It's normal. It's legal. You know, it tastes good. And the consequences aren't so immediate often. So therefore, it's easier for us to rationalize, well, it's okay. I'll start tomorrow. I'll go on the diet tomorrow. I'll join the gym tomorrow. Tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. You know, it's called the disease of tomorrow. So what are the three H's? The three H's is that in order to holistically change our relationship with food, we change ourselves. We have to change, address the three H's: our head, our heart, and our hands. Our head, the mental health, like you said, how we think about food, relationship with food in our life, what's its purpose, my relationship to self-care and self-health and understanding how nutrition is a foundation of that. My heart, my relationship with food, as far as my relationship to self-indulgence, to comfort eating, to stress eating, to learning to step out of my comfort zone and, you know, deal with life. Life's going to happen. I got a news for everybody. You know, the stresses and triggers of life are not going to go away. And, you know, most people, thank God, who are joining this, you know, chat this evening are not going to go to a crackdown or shoot heroin or, you know, just get hooked on Oxy. Why? Because they realize no matter what stress they're dealing with, they're not going to go to that extreme. So certainly they're going to be willing to understand, well, okay, there's certain, you know, bottom lines I'm not going to engage in. Well, why can't we put overeating or stress eating in that same category? More people die of obesity than all drug overdoses combined. And understand that our relationship with food and our relationship with self-care has to be one that we have to prioritize and we have to nourish. And the third thing is hands, having a responsible food plan. Like the Pasuk in Kippitul Lama Dalet, we say every Pesach, Somei Rabbi Yasei Tov. It's not enough just to avoid the sugars and refined carbohydrates and the fasting. With Yasei Tov, we have to make sure we're eating properly, we're nourishing ourselves. Because one of the main triggers that we find ourselves is to be vulnerable is if we're hungry, if we're undernourished ourselves, our blood sugar is crashing and our adrenaline has run out and add a certain stress or triggers that, well, then we're gone. So we can avoid that proactively, not just reactively. So those are the three H's we have to address: our head, our mental health, our understanding, you know, psychologically, our relationship with food, our heart, how we deal with food on an emotional level, and our hands, having a very responsible, practical food plan. Now, to address the fourth question, as far as how do I get the motivation? So those are the four P's. It's got to be a priority. Anything like that you do that you have consistency with, by definition, has to start out as a priority. All of us have a to-do list, and the to-do list has two sides to it: necessities and luxuries. The luxury are the things that we can get to do, you know, and get done. If it's nice, it's great, but if we don't do it, okay, it's not the end of the world. But in necessity, we're not going to bear the consequence of not doing it. So is there anything more important than our self-care and our health and our nourishment? You have diabetes, high cholesterol, hypertension, stroke, many forms of cancer, like you said, all as a result of our malnourishing ourselves. And malnourishing doesn't just mean undernourishing. It could be overnourishing and improper nourishing ourselves as well. Everyone can optimize their nutritional intake, their diet. Some, you know, moderately, some significantly. So we have to realize it's got to be a priority. Give an example to a lot of my clients. Where am I going to make the time? Well, you know what? When you were single, you had a lot of time to go with your friends, to go on, you know, homeboy trips and to, you know, sleep in and to learn, you know, night seder, whatever you want. But then you decided you wanted to go in Shidduchim. And Baruch Hashem, you got married. Well, now your priorities have changed. Your time constraints and demands are very different. And then what happens? oftentimes, b'shat tovah, a year later, you got a child. And now your prayer is completely different. They have a child to deal with, and this whole diaper bag for this little bitty kid needs all these different, you know, things. And then the second child and the third child. And all of a sudden, your time management perspective is completely changed because you're prioritizing your wife and your family. And that's a great thing. But you get it done because it's still a necessity, right? So if something's a priority, if something's a necessity, then it's going to get done. Like I said, if it's a possibility, it usually becomes a probability. If it's possible for me, if it's possible for me to sleep in, then I'll, it usually is probability, right? But if it's out of mind, then it's out of sight. If it's not an option, I'm not going to do it. For example, let's say you're chalishing, you're stressed and you're chalishing from chocolate, you're just craving some chocolate. And the and you come to the counter, you know, you open the drawer. Oh, there's that chocolate you're looking for. But there's one problem, Usher. What's the problem? It's milking. And you're fleishig. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're not going to eat it. Why not? What happened? The stress didn't go away. The desire and the craving for the chocolate didn't go away. The recipe didn't go away. Your taste buds didn't change. What happened? Your prioritization as a firm yid, I'm not going to, you know, eat something that's milking if I'm fleishig. So if it's out of mind, then it's out of sight, even if it's right in front of you. So therefore, that's changing your head. And if the first thing has to be a priority. Once something's a priority, and then what do? We make a plan. Just like you're taking your kid with you. I tell, you know, the first time you run out of diapers is the last time you run out of diapers. You always make sure your diaper bag is full. So, you know, right? So you, when something's a priority of ours, you plan it out and you're taking a vacation. And you go to a place where there's no kosher food. You're going to bring kosher food with you, right? If someone, you have kids that have certain, you know, food allergies, you're going to make sure that they're taken care of. When you're traveling, what time is mincha? When is shkia? I do have my tefillin with me. If something's a priority, you make sure that you plan to make it happen. The results occur because you have a plan. What's the third P? You become precise in that plan. It's not just a plan that's, you know, a general kind of, you know, pie in the sky. But you're precise in the plan, and you just like in business. If a business, okay, you show up an appointment. Okay, I know I got to meet this client. I'm going to this conference. Oh, who am I meeting with? No, you have a plan. You have your portfolio. You have your presentation. You have your, you know, whatever it is to be successful in that meeting. So the greater precision, the greater the success. And then the fourth P is patience. You have to have patience. Things don't change overnight. I didn't lose 130 pounds overnight. That's what the Ozempics of the world promise you. That's what the surgeries of the world and the drugs of the world and the quick fixes of the world promise you. The quick fix, the magic pill, right? You got to have patience. One day at a time, if something's a priority and you have planned it out and you execute it with precision and patience, and that will lead to progress and results.
Okay. Sounds amazing. Let's go to the first live question.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much. I always grew up eating extremely healthy, and I have a great relationship with food. I was raised eating very healthy, being fed very healthy food. So I'm not struggling in that area. I was just wondering, I recently got very into the glucose godness movement. Are you aware of that? Like, it's a pattern of the way
explain it to everybody, because I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, it's basically, it's a certain diet that follows, it tries to suppress your cravings, and it focuses on, rather than avoiding food, it focuses on which food you eat first. So it focuses on starting with the fiber, continuing to the protein, and then eating carbs. So I was wondering what your take on that is, and if, according to that diet, you can eat anything, like you can eat a piece of cake, but only after your meal. So because you had already your fiber, so, and then you're having your protein, so the right food is getting digested first, so your body will absorb less of the carbs. So my question is what your take on that is, and if you believe this is a key, but this is key for weight loss.
Sure. So that's a great question. So glucose stability is the key for all of our health and for ideal and maximizing our metabolism. So absolutely, the more unstable our glucose is, which means our blood sugar, the amount of sugar that's in our blood, the more unstable that is, the more it spikes and more it crashes, the more cravings we have, the more it feeds our hunger, the more it feeds our fat cells, the more you know, unstable and less satiated we are over an extended period of time. So the Golan, responsible food plan, definitely one of the main goals of that should be to maintain what's called glucose stability.
Kol halashon.
What you said there's a certain, you know, misconception that if you're eating fiber first, then protein, and then the chocolate cake, then you'll somehow absorb those carbs less. Where do they go? They don't disappear. Your body's still absorbing those carbs, and those are refined carbohydrates. One of the goals of that approach is that you'll hopefully be less tempted and have a less of a hunger or a craving for the chocolate cake because you'll be fooled by the fiber, because fiber is very bulky, you know, and it causes some person to be satiated, and the protein, which is something that we enjoy and that stimulates our desires. So it's really more of a motivational approach than a scientific approach. Because if we're still eating the chocolate cake, in the end, we're having those simple carbohydrates that are causing our blood sugar to spike and crash. We're having the excess calories, and those excess calories and those empty calories, they don't disappear. They go to our fat cells. And the more that we feed our fat cells, the more our fat cells generate craving, generate desires, generate metabolic instability. And, you know, therefore that's what leads to prediabetes and diabetes.
I want to jump to Don for a question. I want to ask him that people that don't go to dietitian or nutritionist, they just, you know, they're overweight. They want to work it out. They want to pump those weights. Like, what do they do when they, you know, they feel like they could actually eat more because they could burn more calories? They'll burn off a big part of their, you know, pizza, whatever, because you're not going to burn 500, 1,000 calories. Like, what's your opinion on that? Is it better in a certain sense to get into the exercise, do the running, do the push-up, whatever it is, and work on the food later? Or, you know, as long as you're working out eventually. I mean, I have friends that work out consistently and they eat whatever they want, and they're in great shape. What's your opinion on that?
Well, it's a catch-22. You know, you'll always... Whenever you work out, your metabolism rises. I mean, your body has two fiber types. It has its aerobic fibers and it has its anaerobic fibers. I tell clients, if you can maximize muscle activity in its fullest, you're going to be burning calories at a faster rate than you would if you weren't working out. The downfall with that is that as you do exercise, of course, your appetite is going to rise just from a natural byproduct of increased metabolism. And that kind of ties into the first question that was asked here, is that she's in this particular diet where if she eats fiber first, can that be a benefit in the succession of the other foods that she has? And when it comes to losing weight per se, you want to maximize the exercise that you're doing in order for you to maximize weight loss. And that's where, when it comes to nutrition, utilizing foods that are, you know, a lot more appetite suppressant, eating foods that are higher in fiber, utilizing foods that are more protein based, staying low from the generals. I tell my clients, you know, there are five things that you could, if you could do these five things, and just from a standpoint of just basic nutrition, utilizing water as your main source of food, that's going to increase your resting metabolic rate. Eating more whole food based foods, staying with the fruits and vegetables. That's the second. Laying low or trying to eliminate as much processed high sugar foods that you can, it's going to help you lessen the amount of overall empty calories that you're taking. And then when it comes to types of foods, trying to veer off fried foods, deep fried foods, that really denatures a lot of the whole nutrients that you're taking in. And then lastly, you know, it's always at the end of the day, no matter what diet you're in, it really comes down to calories in, calories out. If you're burning more than you're taking in, you are going to lose weight. You could be in a gluten-free diet. You could be on the most healthiest diet in the world. But if you're taking 8,000 calories of healthy food, you're not going to lose weight. Your body's only going to take in as much nutrients as it needs. And then anything in excess, it's either going to store as, you know, carbohydrates, which turns into, glucose, it turns into store carbs, or it's going to process it and store it as fat. So you have to be able to utilize exercise for the benefit of increased metabolism so that you can lose the weight. If you could do that, then you're on your way to reaching your goals.
Okay, I have a follow-up question for Donna and for Ellie.
Yeah.
By us, the big thing by a lot of people walk. They go these brisk walks and they feel like they're losing weight. Is that a myth or is that reality? At the end of the day, when somebody could jog or exercise, and they're just taking a brisk walk, you see like hundreds of people just like walking faster with their wives, are they really exercising? Are they burning calories? Or they're just moving their body and their joints?
Ellie, you want to take that one or you want me to?
You start, Dan.
Yeah, look, any activity, whether it's walking or running, you are going to burn calories. It all comes down to how many calories you're burning at that time of activity. So if a person was walking for an hour as opposed to a person jogging for an hour, jogging, you could burn 2, 3, 4 times more calories than you would walking. You know, I have clients that like to walk. As I thought, I had a great time walking with my wife the other day. We walked for a half hour, not realizing the half hour was only a quarter of a mile. Whereas the other client says, well, you know, I ran for a half hour. And usually what I ask them is, so how long did you run? How long did you walk? So a half hour time span of activity, it really depends on what and how effective that activity is in order for you to burn the amount of calories. But you are burning calories, whether you're walking, whether you're jogging. It just comes down to the amount of calories that you're burning at that point of activity.
So I'd like to follow up on what Don said. I think it's a very important point, concept of calories. Let's, unpack that a little bit more. Not all calories are created equal. And I'll give you an example, and I think you'll be very clear. See, I have Reuven and Shimon. They're both 6 foot tall, 200 pounds. They both need the same caloric, content for the day to maximize their nutrition. Let's say it's 2,000 calories. So Reuven consumes 2,000 calories over the course of the day by eating lean proteins, vegetables, fruits, whole grains, the right times of the day, and therefore he consumes his 2,000 calories on the dot. Shimon, how does he consume his 2,000 calories? At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he eats a huge cotton candy stick. That's all he eats the whole day. And that cotton candy stick has 2,000 calories. Now, you probably don't need to be a nutritionist, right, or an exercise, specialist like Don to intuit that maybe their bodies will react a little differently. But wait a second. We said they consume the exact number of calories that they needed. So what's going on? It's the quality of the calories just as much as the quantity of the calories. And even quality is more important. Let me explain. What's my title? I'm not a calorist. I'm a nutritionist. The body doesn't need calories. Now, that might sound sacrilegious. The body needs nutrients, 6 essential nutrients, protein, carbohydrates, fat, and vitamins, minerals, and water. Those are the 6 essential nutrients that a body needs in order to survive. The billions of cells that we have in our body need those nutrients. That's what it's called nutrition. Calories is the very important process of converting that food into energy. But it depends what kind of fuel you're putting into your body. You're putting in lard, you're putting in soil, you're putting in, high octane gasoline, you're putting in sugar. What kind of fuel are you putting in to determine what kind of calories you're producing? So therefore, let's go over the cotton candy stick, right? So is there any protein in the cotton candy stick? No. Any healthy carbohydrates? No. Any vitamins, fat, minerals, water? No. A big goose egg, 0 for 6, and not nearly as nutritious. So therefore, what happens to those calories, to those 2,000 calories? So since they're refined carbohydrates, they spike our blood sugar, they spike Shimon's blood sugar, so you give them a rush of energy. And what goes up must come down. Newton's law applies in nutrition as well. His blood sugar spikes and it crashes, and therefore he's in that sugar low. And therefore the majority of those calories go to feed the fat cells. That's what happens to them. So when we want to lose weight, so we say it's the weight loss industry, but really technically it's the fat loss industry. We're not here to lose weight. We're here to lose fat. So when I got on the scale 22 years ago and I weighed 300 pounds, did that mean there was 300 pounds of fat in my body? No. That was my total mass. So what goes into the total mass of any person? Several factors, most of which is water. We're all 80% water. And our bones and our muscles and our sinews and our skeletal structure. And these fat cells that we accumulate and expand based on excess calories and empty calories. So therefore, when we're crash dieting, and we're just, burning calories, but it's not through a balanced, healthy, robust food plan, then what we're doing is just we're reducing our inflammation because all of us are chronically inflamed. have chronic inflammation. Refined carbohydrates and sugar and the results of diabetes and weight gain in fat cells themselves create inflammation. So that's why so many people lose so much weight the first couple weeks of diet. It's all water weight. That's what it means. It means the inflammation. We don't want to lose water. We don't want to lose, you know, a muscular, you know, structure, a skeletal structure. You know, we don't want to lose bone mass or muscle mass. We want to lose those fat cells. We want to simultaneously, robustly nourish our healthy cells, because that's what nutrition is, and starve the fat cells. So like Don is saying, we need to understand what we're eating, have a maximize the food that our body needs, our healthy cells, and therefore minimize the excess calories and minimize the empty calories, and therefore we'll consistently lose weight. And I'll give you a secret. You'll actually lose more weight quicker that way. Why? Because whenever we're starving ourselves and malnourishing ourselves and doing these crash diets and crazy things, right, our body goes into starvation mode and we impede our caloric efficiency. Caloric efficiency is a term, is a kind of word, you know, layman's term for metabolic efficiency. Caloric efficiency, how efficient is our body in burning calories? So therefore, if we're maximizing our nourishment and minimizing excess or empty calories, what we're doing is we're maximizing metabolism, we're maximizing our caloric efficiency, and our exercise is completely supporting that and, you know, enhancing that. And therefore, we'll be lose weight consistently over the course of time, as opposed to dropping 30 pounds, you know, in 15 days or 30 days, and then, you know, we'll just fall off the ladder. Not only is it not, and then it's not sustainable, and we're starving, and who's going to be able to do that anyway? Because we're just starving ourselves and torturing ourselves.
Okay, two other questions people text me. Ellie, people want to know, what's your take on fruits and vegetables? Like a lot of people say, oh, it's good, it's healthy, it's natural. But a lot of people say, oh, it's sugar, it's terrible. That's number one. And number two, people are asking, like you said, you need carbs as part of your diet, right? But we always associate carbs with cookies, cake, and everything that's poisonous that will kill us in a second. So what's good carbs that we can eat that will that fulfill that nutrition chain?
Great question. Thanks. So the sugar, naturally occurring sugar that exists in fruit mostly and in vegetables and even, you know, in lactose and in proteins, is healthy and necessary for our bodies. Now, when we consume, I'll give you an example of an orange versus orange juice. They say you love an orange, a big navel orange. You eat a navel orange, it's delicious. It's, you know, it's wonderful. Let's say you want to have a glass of orange juice. How many of those big navel oranges would you need to squeeze just to get a small 8-ounce glass of orange juice? At least 4, right? So if you ate 4 navel oranges, you'd get sick. But when you drink a glass of orange juice, you're consuming the sugar of 4 navel oranges in about 10 seconds without the pulp, without the fiber. So therefore, when sugar is naturally occurring in the flesh and the pulp of the food or the fruit, then your body's digesting and breaking down more slowly, more moderately, and also hopefully you're eating with a protein, which also helps balance it out and, you know, the conversion of the carbohydrates. And therefore, that's how your body will convert and best utilize those carbohydrates, as opposed to concentrated sugars, which is any type of added sweetener, whether it has calories or not, whether it's an artificial sweetener, it has no calories, it's still spiking your blood sugar. And those have a lot of, you know, baggage in addition to that as well. So you want to minimize any added sweeteners and therefore have naturally occurring sugar, which is great. Now, as far as carbohydrates go, you know, we say there's a concept of Eureta Sidoros, right? The lowering of the generations. So that concept, as a rule, there are exceptions, but as a rule, that it also exists with food. The more a food is processed and broken down from its original whole status into a refined status, specifically with carbohydrates, the less nutrient value it has, less healthy it has, the more glucose instability it creates. So therefore, potatoes are fine. That might sound sacrilegious, right? Not just sweet potatoes, right? Even though white potatoes have my higher, you know, a little higher glycemic index, it's a natural food as opposed to potato flour. Oatmeal as opposed to oat flour. Corn as opposed to corn flour. Any flour, think about the powder, that's a refined carbohydrate by definition. So the more that we avoid refined carbohydrates and eat healthy whole carbohydrates, rice, quinoa, kasha, barley, right, oats, well, you know, those are just many of the primary types of carbohydrates, cooked or breakfast cereals that are whole carbohydrates as opposed to refined carbohydrates, minimizing and trying to avoid the added sweeteners, those are fine. That's what our body needs. I'll end with this idea. Most of my clients are from, but those that aren't, I say it happened just, I'm sure my keeper, there's a little black velvet frisbee on my head, and I say, I apologize, but I'm a from nutritionist. I'm a religious nutritionist. So what does that mean? It means I think Hashem is a little smarter than I am. I mean, I'm not here to manipulate your body, to mask symptoms, to cut away 3/4 of your stomach, to pretend that you don't have that hunger, that you don't need those nutrients or the ability to process and to metabolize the food. I'm here to help you maximize the inherent health, the chachmas aguf, that every human being has. Not only is that a proper hashgafa, it just makes sense logically. When you buy a computer like the one that's behind you, you're not just going to open it up and figure out how to work it on your own. You're going to look at the instruction manual. How does it work? How is it created to work? So our body has a tremendous chachma, a tremendous wisdom of nutritive value and nutritive, dynamism that we can maximize and we should maximize through the vehicle of food. Hashem created the dynamic that we consume our nutrients through food, not through supplements, right? Not through powders, not through, starving ourselves, but through food. So we have to learn to have that healthy, ideal relationship with food. And that's how we have a healthy relationship with carbohydrates as well.
So again, what would we consider a healthy carbohydrate?
So any whole carbohydrate that's not processed. So sweet potatoes, white potatoes, any type of a whole grain rice, kasha, barley, quinoa, oats, any of the chamishim in dugim that's not ground into flour. Because when you grind something into flour, you've converted it from a whole food into a processed food. By definition, you process it, you refined it.
Okay, let's go to the next live question. You're on.
I was actually going to ask challenge. Phrase that for a minute. There's actually a question strictly from I was actually going to add Don. I'm in the field also. I'm a certified fitness trainer and I know Don for a while. Yeah. He works for the Lakewood Gym, correct?
And we service the Lakewood Gym.
Okay,
yeah.
So, Don.
Yeah.
Don, you already know how this practice goes where many, many clients come up and they come up with a variety of excuses and justifications for why they can't do what they do. And some want to do bodybuilding, others want to do weightlifting, could be calisthenics. At the core of that question, it always comes up, I want to get into shape. I want to lose weight. You've heard of this.
Yes.
I don't know if you recognize me, but,
you do look familiar. Yeah.
Okay.
Question is, how many pushups have you done lately, Reed?
I ain't sharing that with you. But my focus exclusively is on the anatomy, the biological and the physiological side of the body. When you eat carbs, you eat junk, you eat things that are not in your body, the body metabolism slows down. It doesn't have a tendency as burning as fast as it can, as it is, I think it's Ellie Glazer said. So I just wonder from your point of view, not going to a dialogue here, a client will come home and say, okay, I went to a nutritionist. All right, very good. My plan is 3,000 calorie at capacity at top. Oh, but I'm at, 500. I want to have a piece of cake. I haven't gone to sleep. I have to sleep in 2 hours. You already know that we know that 3 or 4 hours in advance, the client should not be actually going to sleep, past the point of eating food. He's supposed to go in with a clear stomach, with a clear body. Client goes in and says, okay, I have 400 calories. Open. My first response is no. Because those 400 calories that may be open or not open past a certain time frame, your body will not burn that energy, those carbs, overnight. Simply speaking, Simply speaking as well, there are a variety of different methods, such as it could be a cardiovascular high intensity, push-up, jumping jacks, that could be resistance, a variety. I think Ellie Glazer said, I also lost my career started about 10 years ago with 75 pounds lost weight. And I established a way of eating which is very, very slow and disciplined. And people criticize me very often, but I take things very, very slowly because for me, it's how is my body, my digestive system, my organs, my intestines, how is it going to break it down? How is the amount of oxygen I have to produce during intense workouts? How much do my lungs, my lungs actually can process? I mean, this is too complicated for now, obviously, but I was going to ask you if whether or not, you see something wrong with what I'm actually relaying, with what I'm expressing myself. In terms of the scientific and the physiological breakdown itself of exercise science.
Question. The question, the way I'm understanding it, is a client or anybody gets a 2,000 calorie diet and he ate 1,200 calories and he says he has an extra few hundred calories. Is it okay for me to burn and eat a piece of cake? Is that your question?
Not really, but I guess why not? I got caught up a little bit.
Well,
with
I mean, I'm still, yeah. Well, I mean, look, I mean, Rudy, look, first and foremost, I congratulate you on losing 75 pounds. Yeah, I'm still trying to absorb what the question really is, but I guess.
You sound undernutrition. You need some more calories.
No, I guess, I guess let me just be very brief here. I'm sorry. I wasn't very clear.
Yeah, go ahead.
Very, very brief. I'll try it. Sort of bounce all over the place. You have a client who says, okay, I went to a nutritionist and I went to a dietitian. Right. Two of them, what they actually don't apply is they do not apply the behavioral or the mental and emotional state of mind of the client, right? You're training a client who comes in, I want to lose weight, I want to get into shape. Okay, no problem. Where do you want to go? I went to a nutritionist, they said A, B, and C. I went to a dietitian, they said the same thing. Then you get to the trainer, and the trainer puts you on a specific plan that's formulated and geared directly towards what you need. It doesn't work. Why?
Well, it's one of two things. It's either you're eating too much and not following the nutritionist's plan, or you're not doing what the trainer is, you know, prescribing you to do. I think at the end of the day, it comes down to, you know, they call it, you gotta trust the process. You know, sometimes during the weeks where you don't see any progress doesn't mean that your body's not responding. I'm still trying to absorb the question you're asking me. I think from a standpoint is you're saying that you went to a nutrition or dietitian, they're telling you to do A, B, and C, you're not seeing results, so you're coming to a trainer, and well, I'm trying to just really take in what you're trying to say.
Go to the next question.
So here's a question that somebody sent in. I'm in my high 30s. I feel okay most days. I sit by a desk all day. Why is it so important to exercise now? Can I start in my 40s?
Well, coach, that's an interesting question because that's probably 50% of the clients that I train. They're in their 30s, they're in their 40s. Why is it important for them to exercise now? Because it's from the moment that you wake up to the moment that you go to sleep, your body has an opportunity. It can either get better or get worse. You know, we're living in an age where you have what's called, and I'm not sure if Ellie has gotten into this in his studies, you have what's called your chronological age and you have what's called your metabolic age. You know, I do have clients who chronologically I have a client that I train, he's in his early 70s, but metabolically, you know, I don't know whether you believe in stepping onto a body composition scale, but just not to go into the detail, but metabolically, he's about a 38-year-old. You know, he has a physical ability and his body is functioning that of a late 30-year-old, as opposed to I have clients that are trained in their mid-20s who are in their high 200s, low 300 pounds, and they're metabolically in their 50s. You know, so at the end of the day, I think the more, you know, the less active you are, the greater of a chance these other underlying issues will start to rise. And, you know, especially when you are not active, you're sitting on a desk. From a mental standpoint, it doesn't release any of the natural hormones that get released when you do exercise. I mean, just from the status of doing cardio, they have what's called a runner's high when you finish doing this runner. Again, I know Ali can attest to this. You know, you have this release of just, and also with Asher, just release of these endorphins that get elevated. And it's really a sense of better well-being and you're in a better mood. I do train clients as well that are in a depressive state, and just by training alone, it helps them get out of that state into a better state of well-being. So whether you're 30s, whether you're 40s, I would start now, you know, and again, it's not about not having time. It's about utilizing the time you have and making it a priority to start doing it.
I'll just add to that real quick. One of the most important parts of my Friday afternoon Erev Shabbos preparation is my Erev Shabbos run. Just to clear my mind, to get myself, you know, rid of all the stresses of the week, to get those endorphins going. And it's such a marked difference when I go into Shabbos, having had that run, and having such, you know, being a different place than if I didn't get that run. And not just physically, but mentally as well.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, let's go to the next question.
Okay. Are you able to hear me well?
Yes.
Yes.
Firstly, thank you very much. Phenomenal topic. So my question will be addressed to both, and then either guest speaker can take it. So we are seeing people who work out during the day. They're active. They go to work. And then there are two things that kick in. One is the nighttime eating. Sometimes your hours are long, and by the time you're able to sit down to dinner, it's already nighttime. Sometimes people are bored and there's nighttime or socializing nighttime. Nighttime eating and emotional eating for people who are totally alone, widowed, single. And the reason I'm bringing this question up is it's at those times, let's say nighttime, if someone's feeling stress, that people cannot just go out for a walk or go to the gym. So I'd like to address the question and to hear your suggestions of what we can bring back to these people. And just as a side note, and I apologize if it sounds a bit jumbled, I will attend classes and I will see even the fitness instructor, who's excellent, might be heavy. So usually it's a she might be excellent in her teaching and her cardio, and you'll see it's a heavier person. True, it may be hormonal or thyroid, but I just think there's another dynamic here. And I think those two aspects, the nighttime eating, the emotional or loneliness, that can kick in. And what do you suggest for people to do at that time? Thank you.
It's a great question. Let me just jump in real quick. Late night eating is the worst type of eating in many ways. First of all, it's not based on nutritional need. It's just feeding our feelings. Going to sleep on a full stomach, we actually burn the most calories most effectively, most efficiently when we're sleeping. We have a full night's sleep. Many studies show that people who don't get enough sleep are actually now, you know, losing weight, not at the most efficient manner that they could be. And there are other, you know, consequences of night eating as well. Sleep apnea, your body trying to digest. You know, the stomach digesting food, breaking it down, is the most taxing non-active event that has to go on in the body. The stomach just working, when we're sleeping and the stomach's full, it's got to break down that food, right? So the heart, when we sleep, we want it to rest. We want our heartbeat to go down. But the heart has to work and pump blood to the stomach to process and digest and metabolize all that food and get into the large intestine and into the small intestine and be digested into your body, then you're not getting that rest. Right? Someone takes a cholent nap after 3 hours, they're exhausted. It's that reason, because they're going to sleep on a full stomach. So the first step is similar to what I mentioned before, is like the kitchen's got to be closed after dinner. We have to have a plan. Having a food plan is critical. The Aseh Tov is really the foundation to help you successful in the Storm Eirah. Storm Eirah meaning do not eat at late at night. You have to make sure you eat a robust, full, appropriate dinner at the right time, and it has to be a priority. Again, like we said before, you know, you're not going to, you know, feed your kids at 11 o'clock at night. You're going to make sure that your family's fed. Well, you're a part of your family as well. We can't sacrifice our own health for the sake of our family. That's one of the greatest challenges I have. Well, I would say 6% of my clients are from mothers, and their whole mothers, you know, there's no more incredible, important role in the whole world than raising a Jewish family, right? But they often do it at the sacrifice of themselves. They have to realize that their needs are just as important, and may I say even more important, than their families. When you go on a flight and they go through the security, you know, stages, and they say, in case of a loss of cabin pressure, the mask will pull, you know, come down and put yours on. If you're traveling with an infant, what do? Put yours on first. Why? Isn't that child neglect? No, because if we're encumbered, we can't properly take care of our people who are responsible for. So again, understand the priority. The first P is the prioritization of my care and my self-health. And therefore, dinner has to be that time. It has to be at the right time, the right amount. And then once dinner is finished, whatever your appropriate plan is for you, kitchen's closed for the night. It doesn't mean you're antisocial, but you know what we learn? And this will dive into the emotional aspect of eating. We learn to process our feelings. And just because we're in an environment where people are putting food in their mouths, who says that we also have to put enough food in our mouth at the same time? If I'm going to a Kiddush or a Vatnach or a Shalom Zachar or a Simcha or a parlor meeting or whatever it is, right? Who says that I have to put food in my mouth at that time? Why do I have to compromise and sacrifice and sabotage my health just because I'm in an environment? Wait, now, someone's saying it's not tempting. I'm saying it's not a challenge, but it has to be when my plan, when my dinner's over, kitchen's closed for the night. And to the emotional aspect of it, it's like we have to learn new coping mechanisms for life. We can't just distract ourselves, anesthetize ourselves with food, escape into food. That's not a healthy, mature reaction in any aspect of life. Whatever we're using for that emotional coping mechanism, food being the most common one, we have to learn new coping mechanisms. But we also have to have step one to realize that food no longer will be an option. Like I said, if it's a possibility, it usually morphs into a probability. But if it's out of mind, if it's not an option, it's out of sight. If you're fleshy again, you're having incredible emotional stress, and the only thing available to have is a milk chocolate, are you going to eat it? No. If it's a tinnitus, if it's a fast day, and you're having tremendous stress, are you going to break your tinnitus? Probably not. Right? Again, when something's a priority of ours, when we put it in that framework, that's the first step. And dealing with emotions and dealing with learning to face our stuff. Emotions are, you know, emotional stress, what are called our toxins, emotional toxins. When we have physical toxins in our body, we need to get rid of them. Like if someone, say, has a cold or a flu or an upset stomach or they're vomiting or they're, you know, they're going to the restroom a lot, those are very unpleasant behaviors to experience, but they're very critically important behaviors to go through because your body's ridding itself of toxins. It'd be much worse if you didn't sneeze or didn't perspire or didn't vomit if you had to or didn't go to the bathroom if your stomach was upset and it was just stayed in. That's the bruch of a sher yatzar by definition, right? So we need to rid ourselves of those physical toxins, even if it's unpleasant to do so. It's much more important to do so. Stress are emotional toxins. We need to rid them out of our body. When we eat, we stuff them down. That's all we're doing is we're stuffing them down. We're anesthetizing ourselves. We're distracting ourselves. We need to get rid of them. So how do we get rid of them? It's not to solve the problem. Like, so exercise is an incredibly important and wonderful tool to get rid of that stress. It gets rid of that stress, get rid of the energy to process, to expend that energy, to yell into a pillow, to hit a pillow, to, you know, talk to a friend or talk to a formerly, you know, a therapist or something. Just do something to change your mindset, to get that energy out. Again, you're not going to solve the problem. You're just going to work through and walk through those 5 minutes of stress. And then you'll be on the other side. You'll be, you know, a lot more capable of moving forward with your day.
Okay. There's a lot of questions coming in. I just want to cover a few general questions that are coming in. If we could do it together quickly, so it would answer like 20 questions that people text me. Just in general, intermittent fasting, well, let's not use that term. Whenever we're done dinner, right? Nobody can eat their dinner. Some people can eat at 4:30, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. Some people have to eat later for whatever the reason is. But Don and Ellie, when somebody finishes dinner, your opinion is done, your shop is closed, drink water the rest of the night, and your body should process everything. That's the ultimate health and ultimate weight loss. Or no, if you didn't eat your carbs and you're still hungry at night, eat something healthy. Like what should somebody do if they ate supper, they're doing everything healthy, they finish supper at 6 o'clock, 10 o'clock they get a craving. Are they better off just not eating, waiting until tomorrow? Or is there another alternative option? Don.
So it depends on your willpower. You know, at the end of the day, if someone is craving and white knuckling it and looking at that piece of chocolate and saying it's either going to be that or going to sleep, chances are the more you look at that white chocolate, it's going to end up becoming something that ends up being a snack to you. I tell my clients, look, the more healthier options you have at your disposal, the better opportunity for you to eat those healthier options. You know, in our household, we have a basket full of fruit. Now, I do have kids, and the reality is, do my kids always eat the fruit? No, but the fact that it's there, they have a higher percentage of eating that rather than going into a pantry, which my wife probably hides most of the time so that they don't scrounge and look for it. But it's one of those things where we know reality, and I know from a, you know, from a reality standpoint and the clients that I train, some of them have a hard time with nighttime. You know, it takes about 2 weeks for your body to get used to something. It's creating these healthy habits. The more that you eat healthier foods, the more that you eat fruits and vegetables, sooner or later your taste buds start changing. And believe it or not, the more you start craving these healthier foods to not, you know, and to top it off, I mean, your take, yeah, go ahead.
That comment, I just want to pause you. Just something amazing that my kids drink many years ago, we drink orange juice and all these juices, you know, the healthy lemonade, you know, full of sugar and sodas. And then we went through like a transition many years ago of just drinking seltzer. And we got to all the flavored seltzers and all of that stuff. And my kids today, young kids, like if I go with them to a restaurant, they'll scream for seltzer. I could offer him a Coca-Cola. His taste buds actually changed and is disflavored from the sugary drinks. Is that weird?
Yes. Yep. Yep. And I'm sure Ali can get into a little more with detail from a nutritional standpoint. But yeah, the more healthier options you have, the better of a chance for you to be on that right, my client likes to say, on that right mahalik. You're on that right path. So you can detour once in a while. You know, I think all of us are human in this aspect of, you know, when no one's looking, am I going to grab that cookie? Probably, you know, I'll share a quick funny story. It was one late night. I was coming home from an event, I think, and it might have been like 12:30 in the morning. I was famished, and I needed to eat. I was just so hungry. So I had to stop by one of these service areas, and there was this, the only thing that was open was a fast food place. I mean, it was 12, I mean, I do that, I'm going to pass out. I'm probably not going to pass out, but I was so hungry. So no one's looking. I'm thinking back of my guaranteed I'm going to see a client. I tell you, the moment I buy this, I'm not going to tell you what I actually got, but it was really indulging, definitely emotional. I sit down as I'm taking my first bite of this sandwich that might have been 7,000 calories. I see a client coming out of the bathroom. I'm like, oh, wow, this is it. He looks at me. I look at him, and I tell him, we're not open right now, so this is technically zero calories, so this does not count. But I'm human, you know? But at the end of the day, if it's one of those things where I fall off the bandwagon, as long as you're on that right path, the next morning you can get back on and start eating your healthier foods. But it's all about habits. I'm a big believer in habits. The more healthier foods you can have at your disposal, the better of a chance for you to have those, the better chance for you to take them, and the more that you eat these healthier foods, come late at night when you are craving, the better of a chance you are going for a piece of apple than you are that white chocolate.
Elliot.
Yeah, so you actually brought up a very important point, Don. What if someone does, you know, relapse or they cheat or they deviate from their plan? What do they do? So if you're riding your bike and you're on the road and you slip off the road and you end up in the ditch in the mud, so what are you going to do? You're going to roll around in the mud? No, you're going to dust yourself off and get back on the road. Right? Anytime, whatever, you know, people think it's defeatist and therefore you're not going to turn back. Your goal is to get to your destination. You're not going to reverse and go back home. You're not going to sit there and, you know, put mud all over your face and just, you know, waddle in there. Well, you're going to dust yourself off and get back on the road. So that's what we do. Right? We're just realistic. As far as at night eating and being human, you know, again, I think it really depends on the person. I work with a lot of Bakrim and clients have a special track for Yeshiva Bakrim, whether they're in high school or base medrash. And you know, their schedules, they come home at 11 o'clock at night and they're starving. They're starving either because, you know, they have a ravenous appetite or a lot of times they just didn't eat sufficiently at dinner. What the Yeshiva serves in dinner is, you know, barely can be called food for most places. So they need to eat at that point. So what they need to have a plan. What should they be eating at that time? What can they supplement beforehand so they're not so ravenous beforehand? Again, planning is critical. If we play out the plan, we're planning to fail. 80% of success is having a plan. Back to the four Ps. It's got to be priority, and then you have to have a plan, okay? For people who are struggling with emotional eating or really dysfunctional relationship with food, then the goal really is to once dinner is over to learn that the kitchen is closed and to distinguish that there's, if I'm eating to meet a need or feed a feeling. If I'm eating to meet a need, a nutritional need, well, my needs have measurable limits. But if I'm eating to feed a feeling, well, my feelings are endless. It's a bottomless pit. It's aimed at ourself. So if I give myself the permission to eat at night, and so, oh, just what's my cheat food? Oh, on Thursday night, I'll do it, whatever. It'll never just be that Thursday night. It's never just that one time. That's the behavioral part of it. It's never just that one time. So once we learn to just get ourselves out that, like I said again, if it's out of mind, it's out of sight. If night eating is not an option for me, once again, on the heels of having a responsible, robust dinner, I have that freedom, I have that chirus, that I'm not meshuba to that feeling, and I have a craving, but I learn to reprocess that craving. And like Don said, oftentimes we catastrophize. We're not going to die. We're not going to keel over. We're not going to faint. We're just going to be uncomfortable. Now, what's the cause of that discomfort? It's FOMO, fear of missing out. Right? So there's a certain element of maturation that we go through when changing our relationship with food. Okay, so I'm missing out on that pleasure, right? On that comfort, on that unwinding, well, I can find something else to. But why do I want to do that? Not because I'm an masochist, because I realize if I perpetuate this behavior, well, then there's diabetes and heart disease and hypertension, high cholesterol and stroke and many forms of cancer and sleep apnea and, you know, b'chule, b'chule. I mean, we got to take a rise. We kind of take responsibility for our health and understand that these behaviors are ones that are just perpetuating the problem, and we have to learn to properly diagnose what's going on in our body. Again, back to Reuven and Shimon. They're both having chest pains. The symptoms are identical, right? Reuven's having a heart attack. Shimon's having indigestion. So even though the symptoms are indistinguishable, the response and diagnosis is very different. Reuven is having a heart attack, has got to go to the hospital, take a nitroglycerin pill. Shimon has got to take an antacid, right? So you got to understand what's going on in your body. Just because we're hungry doesn't mean we need to eat. One of the chapters in the book is called HALT. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Those are the four triggers that generate physiological desires to eat. It's not psychosemantic. It's really there. If we're hungry, either we, at the end of a fast, or we haven't, you know, properly nourished ourselves, or we're indulging, or we're having something that's enjoyable, and we want to perpetuate enjoyment, you're sitting down with a good steak, and it's delicious, but you power through the amount you need, and you end up eating the whole 12 ounces, right? We're angry, emotionally, you know, stressed, any type of emotional trigger. Lonely, like you said before, I'm lonely. You know, I'm bored. What can I do to fill up the next 15 minutes of my day? Or I'm tired. I can't stay up unless I eat something. So those generate desires for food, for eating. But I have to use that word. What's the word halt mean? Stop. Stop, halt, and process that feeling. Say, wait a second. Do I need to eat right now or not? Learn to process our feelings, not just to feel compelled to have to act on them. I call it hydrate and contemplate. Don't feel and flail. Drink and think. Take a drink of water. And just let those 5 minutes pass. And you know what will happen? An incredible thing happen. The catastrophe most of the time will go away. You'll be able to move through it. Water nourishes, as Don said, doesn't just hydrate us. You learn to do that, and that is really critical, not just consistent weight loss, but changing the behaviors as well.
Okay, we got a lot to cover here tonight. Okay, you're on. Next live question.
Hi. So I'm wondering about, I'm raising like a toddler, a two-year-old, and I'm trying to build like healthy habits, and I know there's this balance of like not depriving him of things that he'll crave that much, that he'll just eat like a lot of it and still get him, like get his palate used to healthy foods. So what's your take on like the right balance of, you're raising your young kids, you have all kinds of opportunities coming up for them, like when they go to grandparents' houses, all kinds of foods being offered to them, and what's the right balance of
One second. I want to get that question a little deeper. That's, you know, she's talking about the two-year-old, but there's a lot of questions that came in. Like, we live in a situation where so much access to candy, sugar is so out of control of kids. So parents that want to raise kids not to be crazy and eat organic and eat, you know, grass, but to want them generally to have the general healthy food and then have a snack afterwards. And you could, in your house at the end of the day, like Don, you know, you could put your fruits out, you could set it up for them, you know what I mean? And you can control really what comes in, especially with younger kids. But everywhere you go, including school, it's like, you know, they give out soda candy and then the kid's jumping out of ADHD and they throw them out of the class. and you go to shul and you go to friends' houses and there's so much candy and crap around. Like, how do we as parents basically do the best? Like what she's asking for 2-year-old, but like on a bigger scale.
Right. It's a great question. So it really depends on the age of the child and the environment that you set for them. And in the context of chinuch banim, whatever's a priority for you, you try as your best to, you know, to give to your children. As far as the 2-year-old goes, it's just they're not at an age, obviously, where they can learn anything. You don't want to restrict them. You want them not to be dependent on the artificial and the refined carbohydrates. So therefore, what you're serving them, you want to be as whole as possible, less refined carbohydrates. But they're eating based on desire. The 2-year-old has no desire to binge. They're just eating, you know, and they're eating for comfort, and they're eating for desire, for because that's what they want to do. Children, babies, by definition, associate food with comfort. That's what nursing is. Nursing, the primary function of nursing isn't to satisfy a nutritional need. It's to satisfy the desire for comfort and relationship with the mother. Eating is like the hechi timsa to that, is the medium that adjusts to that. By definition, the term weaning is not just weaning a child off of the dependency of nursing to eating on their own, the independence of their own, but it's also learning now the child starts to develop the understanding of making choices with food. So you want to provide them with those choices that are in their best interests. So therefore, avoid the refined carbohydrates, avoid the sugars, avoid the sodas, and at that age, just let them try. I find it's way too young to really try to impose something or you know, create any restrictions for them. As a whole, the wider question that you really asked, Usher, is a whole bigger issue. And that really comes to the environment. And chinuch banim, I'll give an example. Let's say that you grew up in Lakewood in your Kollel family, and let's say you take a job at an out-of-town Kollel. And you're entering this wonderful town, but everyone else there eats cholestam. And you eat cholav, and you've decided, for whatever reason, I'm saying it's right or wrong, but you've decided we're going to keep Cholav Yisrael here. But your kid's going to be in different environments with the other kids in the town, and they're going to be having Cholav Stam there. Again, I'm not saying it's the right decision or the wrong decision, but it's a decision you've made, and it's not uncommon at all. So how do you do that? Right? So you prioritize. It's not something restricted. It's something, anything that's a priority of yours in the concept of chinuch banim, you provide to your children as best as you can. This is a priority of ours. This is something that we do and try to do your best to keep that and understand what's the my level, what's the benefit of it, not just being hard on them, being a food policeman about it, but being it's like something that's precious, that's important, that makes us special, not to belittle the other people, that makes us special. And I'll give you another example, right? Peanut allergies and food allergies are tragically, but I'm thinking why that is. It's a whole other topic we can go in another night. They're rampant. So you have a kid who's got a peanut allergy and they're going out with their friends and they're going to this bakery, they're going to this party, whatever it is. They're not going to eat anything unless they know for sure that there's no peanuts there. How can they do that? Where's their, desire, their self-discipline? It's not about discipline. It's about awareness that I understand the consequence of that, back to prioritization. So really that's where it comes from. Going to with schools, again, that's all another parsha. We can speak about that, another episode concept of schools and nourishment. But it comes down to, because what we can control is what's important to us, the environment, the food environment that's in our home. And when our children are outside of our home, impart to them from a position of positivity and elevation and why we want to, keep these priorities for ourselves and our health and their self-respect as well. It's really the child learns concept of self-respect when they're able to have those boundaries. But again, everyone does their best.
Okay, let's go to the next live question. You're on.
First, I'd like to give a shout out to Don. This is not the first Zoom call I was on. During COVID, every Monday, Thursday, we had boot camp on Zoom. So that kept us going then. First question is, before you were discussing a half hour walk versus a half hour jog, for most people that don't do exercise, it's like a 4-minute jog versus a half hour walk. So which one is better? After 4 minutes, you get like tired out. The next question is just overall, healthy food, people think of it as health, hard to make and prepare and expensive. So what's good, something, a good idea, breakfast, the lunch, you know, something just like a tip.
But you know, it's good to see you, man. It's been a while. And I tell you, you know, you're always welcome to take one of my boot camp classes again. maybe I'll see you tomorrow.
I live out of state.
Oh, wow. Well, hopefully we're looking to see if we can work a way to make it more of a Zoom call as well. All right. So to answer the first question, what's more effective, a 4-minute jog or a 30-minute walk? Well, just based on exercise physiology, I always tell clients, you know, whatever type of activity you're going to do, if you are going to do activity, aim to have at least 20 minutes of activity. 30 minutes would be great. Because even if you're going to go in and do a crazy 4-minute jog, I mean, your body has to get itself into that mode of working itself up for full physical activity so it can optimize performance. When it comes to what's going to be more beneficial, that or a 30-minute walk, I would probably say a 30-minute walk just because you're getting yourself in that mode, and when your body's in that mode of activity, it has a better opportunity to sustain higher metabolic rate, and for health purposes, you know, your body is at an elevated cardiovascular health than it would be if you were just doing a 4-minute crazy jog. Although I would do a 4-minute crazy jog than sitting at the desk doing that. Ellie, I think the next one's for you.
Sure. So what's a tip for, probably breakfast, lunch and dinner, you know, on one leg. So breakfast really is one of the 3 most important meals of the day. So you're asking a great question and you need a robust breakfast. And when we wake up, what part of our body uses the most energy and requires the most calories? Our brain. So as soon as we're awake, all of a sudden we have a requirement for nourishment. We have a requirement for energy and calories. And if we're not supplying our nutrients and our nourishment, what's happening is our adrenaline is pushing us forward, but then it's going to crash. So a robust breakfast really is usually 3 categories: a protein, a grain, and a fruit. And that balances out the protein, the carbohydrates, so therefore the carb load, the glucose conversion is moderated. Protein that is the right, again, depending on for the person, I feel a personalized food plan for everyone is critical. One size fits all approach really is just for weight loss and as far as weight loss goals and food plans is, you know, very inappropriate. But as a general rule, having a full serving of protein, whether it's eggs or cheese or, or milk or yogurt, whether it's dairy, whether it's, you know, plant-based protein or meat-based, you know, protein, having a whole carbohydrate like oatmeal or a healthy, you know, whole grain cereal, rice cakes occasionally. I wouldn't have rice cakes every morning, but you can have that, you know, occasionally on the run, and a fruit. You know, a serving of fruit, the 1 whole fruit or 6 ounces of a cut up fruit. That's a good, robust breakfast. And you should have that within 2 to 3 hours of being awake. And for most people during the week, you can do that. You know, get up, you learn, you dive in, and breakfast should be between 2 to 3 hours of being awake. On Shabbos, we can't do that. So, you know, if you drink water before davening, or then we just, you know, power ourselves through, but we should be eating soon after davening. You want to wait till 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but that's a whole different type of a food plan regarding Shabbos. And then you go forward from there. So that's really what the breakfast looks like, is a protein, grain, and a fruit. And then you're just continuing the day with lunch and dinner, again, with the right amounts of protein and vegetables and fruit and grains. And depending on your day, a food plan has 3 characteristics. Like healthy fueling is what's called QQT. You have the right quality, the right quantity, and the right timing. The right quality of fuel, the right quality of food that your body needs to provide the full fuel that you need. The right quantity, not too much and not too little. And the right timing, right? And therefore, you meet those. It's echos, chamos, and zmanim, called the QQT. If you meet those on a daily basis, that's really the template for a healthy food plan.
Okay, let's go to the next live question. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I'm asking this also not just for myself, but for someone else apparently has the same question. But as a, apparently it's a common problem, I don't know. As a single, I'm invited to friends and neighbors for Shabbos and Yom Tov meals, and I find it difficult to not overeat and indulge. I don't want to give up the important socialization. Am I wrong about my priority? I need to lose fat for my total health. You know, that's just to say I don't want to be one of these, you know, cranks either, you know, somebody really, you know, fastidious, but how do you really balance a socialization with, you know, with proper diet or, you know, or refraining from eating?
That's an excellent question. Thank you for that. So you absolutely should not permit yourself. You should not, you know, hold yourself away. Socialization is critically important for all of us. If it's possible to choose the guests, maybe you have a repertoire of now of guests who can provide you with, you know, that have the healthiest choices, that have vegetables, you know, there available, that have clean proteins, meaning not just breaded and deep fried or filled with sugar. Friday night meals usually for most people will have, you know, those options available. So then it's on you to manage the quantity control. So what I like to do in those situations, have a plan, map out in your mind, even write it out on paper. If you kind of can anticipate, most of us can anticipate what the meal is going to be. It's going to start out, you know, like I may have one piece of bread, right? I'm going to have 2 soup spoons of dip. I'm going to have, let's say, a small piece of fish and a big plate of salad. I'm going to have one bowl of soup. And then I have a big plate of vegetables and one piece of chicken or one piece of meat. And I'm going to skip the desserts. I'm going to skip the Lakshinkogel. So map it out beforehand. And therefore, instead of trying to choose spontaneously while you're there. Of course, if we leave ourselves to spontaneity, then that often ends up to indulging. But if you make it, map it out, back to planning it out, I find that's really helpful in an environment that you have less control over. And then let's say they don't have a fruit. So then when you come home, if it's within a certain, let's say 60 minutes, have your fruit when you come home. Shabbos lunch is a little more tricky because a lot of times, unfortunately, people just, it's a brown meal. You know, there's no green, there's no colors there, there's no vegetables, it's just meat and potatoes. So sometimes, again, depending if you would make kiddush beforehand and have, let's say, your vegetables before you go there. If you're really pretty confident that you're not going to have the vegetables there. Or if, again, if you get home within a timely manner, have your vegetables when you come home and just eat, you know, have a bowl of chulent, a plate of chulent, and, you know, moderate the choices that you make there. But try to really avoid the desserts. And another thing is to offer to bring gifts. You know, you'll bring flowers, you know, bring a salad with you. Bring, you know, hey, can I bring vegetables? I just had this, come up with creative ideas. Oh, I just had this, I just came across this great recipe for these great green beans. Can I bring them over? Yeah. So be creative in helping to support and supplement what your host is having. So you'll know that there's a better chance of the food that you'll need. But absolutely, you should not isolate yourself.
Would you say the same idea, what we started the program talking about, Yom Tov, where we're coming from, with all of these sudas, is this the plan that you would tell people?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You have to map it out beforehand. That's so important. Because, well, think about it. When you're driving and you're going 60 miles an hour and there's a stop sign, a red light ahead, what do? You accelerate into the stop sign? No, you slow down. Because if you try to, you know, slam your brakes 10 you know, seconds before, and you're going to blow through that stop sign. Because the car has a lot of momentum, has a lot of energy. When we engage Taiva Sechila, it's the strongest physical energy that the human body has other than, in addition to, the desire, the energy that's created to have children. So therefore, once we turn on the energy of our Taiva of eating, of indulgence, and we're eating, and then we try to put the stop sign on that, only when we turn, we're going to blow through the stop sign. So map out beforehand how much, not just what you're going to eat, but how much you're going to eat. I'm going to take one piece of chicken. I'm going to take two small pieces of meat. I'm going to take this one plate of vegetables. I'm going to take one piece of potato cocoa. Literally map it out beforehand. Because when you're eating that meat, right, you're going to want to eat more. That's a natural, normal feeling. Give you an example. Let's say you have a six-year-old. Your six-year-old's playing outside. It's 6 o'clock in the beautiful, sunny, you know, afternoon, like it is, like an Indian summer here. And the mother says, you know, Neshama, it's time to come in now. And he's having a great time with his friends. It's time to come in for dinner. What does Avrami say? No, not at all. What is he, a chutzpah kid? No. He's in the middle of an enjoyable experience and he wants to perpetuate that pleasure. That's a natural and normal reaction to have. But if he acts on that feeling, what's he going to do? He's going to stay out till 6:30, 7, 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. He's going to come in late. He's going to miss dinner. He's not going to get enough sleep. He's not going to do well in school tomorrow and the next day. So the cost will far outweigh the gain, all pun intended, right? So even though it's a natural and normal feeling to him to have to perpetuate the pleasure, it's not necessarily the right decision for him to make. So he needs an outside source, an accountability partner, as Don said earlier, his mother, to help him make the right choice. So when we sit down to a steak, let's say for most men, the proper nutritional need for protein is 6 ounces of cooked meat. So you sit down to a steak of a 12-ounce delicious steak, and you're eating that steak, and it's geschmack, and it's delicious, and you're eating one forkful after the other. You come to that forkful that represents the 6th ounce. What do you want to do at that time, Menachem? You want to keep on going, right? Because you're just like a rumble. You're in the middle of an enjoyable experience, and you also want to perpetuate the pleasure. It's a normal and natural reaction to have. But is it the right decision to make? No. Because if you just blow through it, you're going to end up eating 12 ounces of steak, and you're just going to, you know, eat all that extra excess calories and just, you know, continue feeding and expanding your fat cells. So I have a plan. If my protein that's served to me is more than I need, well, I'm going to cut it out beforehand. Or I'm going to kind of predetermine what my quantity level is, and therefore that's going to give me the best chance to stop where I need to stop, and I graduate that stop instead of, you know, slamming the brakes.
Gotcha. So I need to plan. So here's a question from somebody sent in. The way I see it, sugar and carbs all stick and add to my weight. When I did a diet with no sugar and carbs, I lost a lot of weight, and then I started slowly eating again. It got gained it all back. His question is, he doesn't think it's possible for the rest of his life. Is it possible for the rest of my life not to eat sugar, bread? What's the solution?
So it's great to have a high sense of self-esteem, but whoever asked that question is not a nubby. He didn't know what's going to be the rest of his life. Let's say that he is diagnosed with a nut allergy or a lactose intolerance, that he can't have that piece of cake for whatever reason. He's not going to eat it, right? It might be uncomfortable at first, meaning that whatever we're making changes, important seminal change in our life, we want to take it one day at a time, one step at a time, because that's all we have in front of us. I call it, you know, today's the cure for the disease of tomorrow. The disease of tomorrow is like, that's the Yetzirah's primary tool to make us be unsuccessful today. Is like, oh, you can't do this the rest of your life, right? Oh, what, I'm going to lose 80 pounds. I'm going to go to the gym and, you know, and have to work all this weight out. How am I going to do this? How can I hold myself back? And if, you know, but if I just do it for today, I just take one day at a time. And you know what? That's not some type of psychological game to play. That's a reality. Cause I'm going to say something to Rua now. You ready? What am I getting? What's in the Rua? Menachem, Usher, Don, myself, everyone on this call, none of us are going to go to sleep tonight with the shtar chov from Hashem on our night table guaranteeing us tomorrow. None of us. None of us have a guarantee for tomorrow. Tomorrow is a gift. All we have to control is today. So psychologically, emotionally, planning-wise, the responsible, right, the mature effort of expression of investment of our time is what can I accomplish today? It doesn't mean I don't plan for the future, but I don't invest my emotional energy into the success of the future. And that's what allows me to reframe my changes, as Don was saying earlier, and just keep them compartmentalized into one day at a time. And mitzvah gerer mitzvah, success builds success. And an incredible thing, like you said before, once we rid our body of the dependency of sugar and we find carbohydrates, which are addictive substances, you know, sugar is an addictive substance just like illicit drugs, and our body becomes dependent on it, not for health, but for comfort. And once we go through that detox and that withdrawal, and we're free of that physical compulsion, then we no longer need it. So, like, why sabotage ourselves again? And therefore, that goes into the other kind of the mindset, and we can maybe, you know, address this to the next question, the mindset, well, how do I do it? How do I change that mindset of looking at that food and saying, well, you know, what's the plus, what's the minus? It's a Mishnah in Perkei Avos, the second parak, the first Mishnah that the Rebbe says in the middle of that Maimer. Ad mechashev hefsed mitzvah keneged schara, v'schara ve'er keneged hefsed. Before you make a decision, contemplate what's the cost versus the benefit of the mitzvah, and what's the benefit versus the cost of the avera. And that's the paradigm to help us make those right choices.
You're saying focus on today only. And most people are like, I can't do this for my whole, you know, for the rest of my life. So you're saying, no, just focus on today.
That's all I have. Exactly. And you know, when you wake up in the morning, you might have a willingness to do the same thing today that you did yesterday.
But his mind is thinking about the rest of his life.
Again, that's the Yetzirah. That's the Yetzirah's primary tool, I call it the disease of tomorrow. It's diseased thinking. to invest my emotional energy into how can I do this for the rest of my life. We don't do that with our children, right? When your fifth grader starts Eilu Mitzvah, starts learning Gemara, he comes home the first day, he says, oh, did you learn the Ketzot, did you learn the Rashba, right? On Yesh Lo Madas? No. You know, you learn, what did the Mishnah say? That's all we expect of our children, that's all Hashem expects of us. What do we have in front of us today? It's the Yetzer Hara's disease, and specifically in eating, to what am I going to do for the next? None of us know. Someone who's not yet observant. I'm going to keep Shabbos the rest of my life. What would we say to them? Well, we'd say, just take it now. You know, do it one Shabbos at a time. And you know what? Most Bali Tshuva, Baruch Hashem, they keep Shabbos for the rest of their lives because they make that change. They prioritize. And like I said, become a Bali Tshuva in your relationship with food.
Tom, somebody sends in a question that they do exercise and they feel like they plateaued on their whatever exercise. Let's say they jog 30 minutes a day. They plateaued on that. And the problem is they feel when they stop doing it, they're just going to gain weight. So they need it. They're forced to do their exercise to maintain their weight, which they're not happy with. And it's not increasing. And if they stop, it like works against them. So it's almost like they're stuck to the exercise just to stay at their overweight size that they're not happy with. Right. So what do they do to increase, to get the metabolism? Like the body gets used to it. The same thing even with diets, certain diets. Like, you know, right. You get, like the person was really asking for also, like, when I become used to no sugar, no this, I'll lose a certain amount of weight, I'll be healthier. But once my body gets used to it, it sort of like rebalances itself. And when they eat again, they explode. You know what I mean?
Right.
The same thing with the exercise.
Yeah, I mean, your body has what is called a plateau. I mean, sooner or later, you go from beginner to intermediate to advanced. And just like athletes, you go from the minor leagues to the major leagues. And sooner or later, once you hit that brick wall, what do you do? I have a lot of clients that sometimes hit that brick wall. And this is where, you know, not to get too deep into, you know, exercise, physiology or whatnot. But variety is really the spice of life, they say. You know, so once you hit that brick wall or that plateau, if for some reason you're jogging for 30 minutes and sooner or later you just can't see any improvement. And this is where you do a reassessment to see, so how are you doing now? And once you've hit that sort of benchmark, what can we do to overcome that plateau? And this is where variety really comes in. From a personal training standpoint, I do assessments on all clients, and we always create what's called a benchmark to see where they're at. And then based on where they're at, I always like to give them certain goals to try to attain. And once you hit that goal, then it's reassessing and they're changing. So it might not just be going for a jog. Just like another client that I have, it might be switching it up. Well, how do you like doing other modalities? How do you like biking? How do you like swimming? How do you like doing bodyweight exercises? I mean, there's so many different ways that you can spark the body and take it out of that plateau mode in order for it to continue to just get the results that you're looking for. But the body is, by human nature, a homeostatic body. You know, it always wants to kind of just stay in its homeostatic mode. And that's why I think Ellie was mentioning earlier in the conversations, you know, applying positive stress to the body is a great thing, because what it does, it releases all these hormones that the body releases in order for you to really have a sense of well-being. And eventually, if it's weight loss is your goal, to increase that metabolism. But if you're hitting a plateau, it's reassessing to see what you're doing and just adding something different. It might not just be a jog, it might be a bike ride, but you do have to elevate that level of intensity in order to overcome that plateau. So I'm a big believer in seeing, well, what the distance is for a half hour, and per se, say someone jogs for 3 miles and a half hour. I'm a big believer in what's called progressive training, where try to elevate that challenge where the following week, don't just aim for 3 miles, aim for 3.10 or 3.15, eventually hitting 3.25 miles in a half hour. Once your body gets into that positive stress mode of continuously elevating, the chances of you hitting your plateau is going to be slim to nil. You'll continuously hit and continuously see results that you're looking for.
I think when a person like keeps on doing well, you could basically commute to Brooklyn back and forth by running. So eventually,
keep it. Yeah. We'll say again.
I'll just commute to Brooklyn and back by running. We'll keep them in the
time. You know, well, it's funny you say that because I had a client who actually rode his bike to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
From Lakewood. I mean, wow, talking about spontaneity. I mean, and I give it to him. I mean, he did bike for Kai. Not going to say who the gentleman is, but he did pretty well. So if you can keep it sparked, yeah, your chances of hitting a plateau are really not going to be a big conversation piece.
There's like two, three questions, like general questions. I'm getting a lot of texts. I just want to cover them now. They're big questions. Yeah. I'm just going to throw it at you. So I'm getting a bunch of texts. What does Ellie think about keto? What does Ellie think about intermittent fasting? What does Ellie think about intuitive this? There's like, I don't even know the names of half these things. So can we just wrap all these different diets like in one question? Like I know I'm throwing a fastball at you, but it's really like, what's your opinion on all these diets? Like give me like a summary.
The definition of diet is Rashi Tevis said, did I eat that? D-I-E-T. Anything that trying to manipulate your body is a krum hashkafa. It's not going to work. It doesn't make sense. You need to maximize the inherent health that your body has. I'm a nutritionist. Now I have smicha, you know, but I don't want to misrepresent myself. I wasn't the smartest guy in the class. You don't need to be a brain surgeon to be a nutritionist. You don't need to have a fancy diet or something to quickly lose a lot of weight. So keto is just carb loading, you know, and avoiding protein. So first of all, your body needs protein. Your body needs a balanced diet. Intermittent fasting has half of it right, meaning we want to not eat after, you know, like 7 o'clock at night or after an appropriate time of dinner. But the first half is completely wrong. They don't start eating until 12 o'clock in the morning, right? At 12 till noon. Your body needs breakfast. You don't want your body to start out in a sugar low. You want to roll, your body needs that nourishment. What are the other ones that, you know, they mentioned? I'm not sure, don't remember the other types of diets. But again, you want to get out of the diet mentality and focus on what's a robust nutritional food plan. That's what we provide. You go to any responsible clinician. Hopefully that's what they'll provide you, a responsible food plan. Because what's the goal? Like I said at the beginning, Usher, the greatest credibility that I have is not that I lost 130 pounds, but I maintained it. Because I changed my relationship with food. And you can start that from day one. Because when we're losing weight, like I said, we're not losing weight, we're losing fat. We want to lose fat cells, the toxic fat cells that we created and expanded because of our excess calories and empty calories.
What about intuitive eating? I'm not familiar with that.
Right. Intuitive eating means just based on what your body feels. So for most people, our intuition is broken when it comes to food.
So my body feels like a 7-layer cake, I should eat a 7-layer cake?
Exactly. It doesn't work that way. Intuitive eating is one of these kind of soft glove approaches that, you know, to excuse that. I'm a big opponent of intuition. Not that a person's intuition in other aspects of their life could be very appropriate. They could be intuition regarding parenting or work or business could be spot on. That's great. But if they're having perpetual, you know, losing weight and gaining weight, then their intuition is broken when it comes to food. They need a food. They need to have the humility to like access a resource, a trainer, a coach, a nutritionist, someone to help them. Help me learn. Help me understand what do I need to eat? When do I need to eat? How do I eat? Be teachable at whatever stage or station in life that you're in. And just acknowledge that. It doesn't mean I'm a bad person. When I was 300 pounds, I wasn't a bad person. I just didn't know how to nourish myself.
I think my age, like I just recently, like really recently started understanding what to eat, what not to eat. To me, a diet was always starving. And like there was no concept of like eating healthy, what's right balance. Like there's just such a lack of information, not of information, lack of knowledge because we're just not taught it. It's not really in our communities respected, not in a bad way, just not. We just teach our kids, do whatever the heck you want, eat as much candy as you want. We don't even understand the basics. Like once we get older and the health becomes an issue and you start doing research, if you care, right, you can learn yourself and then you learn it. But like I feel there's such a lack of just basic knowledge and you could just go online and do searches, meet a nutritionist, like wake up, smell reality. You're going to pay for the price for this one day or another. Somebody started exercise, I was exercising with a person and then they know the exercise and they tell me, oh, this hurts. That I can't do this exercise because if I run, my knees hurt. And if I do bench pressing, my shoulders hurt and everything hurts. I was like, they're saying basically the exercise is causing the problem. I was like, no. You have the problem. The exercise is showing you that you have the problem. If you're not going to deal with your knees now when you're 30, when you're running, you're just going to have a knee replacement when you're 60. The problem is there. It's not the running.
So Asha, what you said is critically important and so fundamentally true that there's such a lack a dearth of knowledge and a lack of a desire to educate ourselves, you know, on what's sound and healthy nutrition. The point that I'll push back a little bit, and this is not a shameless plug for, you know, our work, is that you really need a professional guide. It's like when you're running, like, what's the proper running for me? What's the type of running shoes? What's the exercise that I need for my body type? What are my goals? You need to work with Don, you know, someone who's skilled, someone who's experienced to help, to guide so you will have the best results. At the end of the day, what's my walkaway goal? Do I want, you know, strength training? Do I want to lose weight? Do I want to be fit? And how do I get there in a healthy way? And with eating, you need to have a responsible, experienced nutritionist to say, okay, I understand what the foods are, but what's a food plan for me? As far as just technically to eat throughout the day. And then more importantly, well, how do I implement in the face of the triggers and the cravings and the challenges that I have?
Would somebody benefit from meeting you once just to get a basic picture? Not, you know, nothing major, just get the clarity, the ideas, and then they can do it on their own.
It depends. I mean, I have a program with it. I created a masterclass series online where a person can do that. And that works for a lot of people. It depends on the individual. If people are self-motivated, they just lack an information or they just want the mahalach, you know, I created the masterclass, which is like a 10 series set of videos that really walks a person through the program. We created an online, individualized food plan algorithm. It's the first of its kind of its whole industry, where it's not just a one size fits all approach that they fill in an assessment form and an individualized food plan is generated for them. And again, if they're self-motivated or they're already within a certain structure of accountability and support, then that's great that they can do that. But most people need that accountability that, in order to have that accountability, piece as well and to guide them as well as the information.
Okay. I got to ask you both this question because I got a lot of texts about it. Well, we want a real answer. We don't want a Kamala answer that you come from the middle-class family and turn the page. Well, the question is as follows. Don, I'll go with you first.
Yeah.
Your personal experience for people that are using the Ozempic as a form of losing weight with exercise, like what do you see? What's your opinion? What's the results? Just be straight, brutally honest.
All right. So be straight and brutally honest. I do have clients that do take Ozempic. And
all of them.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, all these shortcuts are is what it is. It's a shortcut. And, you know, the study shows that really, you know, the slow and steady is what really wins the race. I do have a lot of clients that do these shortcuts. They lose weight, but they get back. And it just comes down to this, you know, I think Ellie said it right. You know, when you're failing to plan, you're planning to fail. And like what you said, Asha, once you gain more knowledge of something, and knowledge really is key, once you start understanding the benefits of what you're doing, it gives you a little bit of a different outlook as far as, you know, should I take a Ozempic? What are the benefits? What aren't? I think for my experience or what I've seen, the ones who really sustain good health and good weight loss and strength are the ones who really do the homework outside of the sessions that I do. Those are the ones that really get the results and have a sustainability. You know, I train clients, I train them once, twice a week, but that's an hour, maybe an hour and a half that I see them. I mean, they have the rest of the week that I'm hoping that they'll do something. And this is where I really engage them, sort of just that guidance to say, okay, these should be your goals. Aim to do X, Y, and Z. You know, I have a client that does treadmill twice a week. He trains with me once or twice a week. And with a good regular nutritional program, you see results because he's doing the homework outside of the sessions that we're doing. So does Ozempic work? Yeah, you'll lose the weight, but is it something that's sustainable? The majority of the clients that I train, the ones that really have sustainable weight loss are the ones who really have a behavioral change and are able to really grab hold of the knowledge that they're taking in and to be able to do it for the benefit of health.
So let me jump on what Don was saying. It's very important. We got to define our terms. What's the definition? It works. What's the goal? So what other multi-billion dollar industry has a 95% failure rate? That's right. The diet and weight loss industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. It has a 95% failure rate. What does that mean? 95% of people who go on diets, they fail. What does it mean they fail? But the definition of success is not losing weight. It's keeping it off. It's sustaining it. And 95% of people who diet, they just lose the weight and they put it back on. So think about it. It's incredible. So the goal, therefore, by definition, from day one, is not to lose weight. I talk to all my clients, whether they're sitting in front of me in my office or, you know, all across the screen in Zoom. I said, your goal here today is not to lose weight. And they look at me, wait a second, I'm overweight. Did you call the weight loss coach? No, your goal is to maintain a healthy body size for the rest of your life. That's your goal.
I mean, so therefore, in short, let's just take this whole 2 hours on what I'm hearing from you. You're not saying diet. You're saying really you need a life change to eat what your body needs healthy, get the knowledge, and stick to it as if like you don't eat on Yom Kippur. That's basically what you're saying.
In a nutshell, right? And but have a responsible plan and embrace it. Don't feel restricted or deprived. Embrace it. Just like a Baal Teshuva embraces mitzvahs, even though there are, you know, things, guidelines that now he's no longer doing. We only excel in life with guidelines. When you drive on a road, there's no yellow line. A lot of bad things can happen. You're restricted. You can only stay to half of the side of the road. But we don't feel bounded or bitter about that. We're grateful.
The diet equals in our brain, starving, restricted.
Correct. Exactly. Which is what diets are. So therefore we have to, you know, have a responsible plan. The sword may rob the asay tov. But what are the other two parts of that pasuk? Bakei shalom v'red fehu. After mabakesh v'shalom, we have shleimus. Our body works in unison and has holistic health when we're moving, when we're eating properly, when we're eating robustly. And we want to be a mabakesh for that. A mabakesh, somebody who cares about it. It's important to them. It's not just something that's passing, right? And then they have the shalom. They have that shalom as well as the shleimus. But then what's the last part of the pasuk? Word fehu. You got to run after it. It's not in a jar. It's not in a prescription. It's not in a pill.
We are forgetting how good the food is.
Okay, so here's the thing, Menachem. In physical pleasure in life.
Oh, you see that kokosh cake come out. Ugh.
Okay, so that's the Mishnah. Right, so you know what? So that's the chiyuv. What's more, is the kokosh cake control me, or do I control the kokosh cake? Which one? So I'll give an example, right? Back to our six-year-old. Let's say you and your six-year-old love roller coasters. And you decide next week we're going to go to Six Flags, we're going to go to the craziest, loopiest roller coaster. You're both really excited because you love roller coasters. You count down the day comes, you go to Six Flags, you park the car, you go through the turnstile, you run past the arcade, you run past the bumble cars, past the laser tag, you get to the roller coaster, but there's one problem. There's a yellow tape around it with a sign that says closed for repairs. What's your reaction at that very moment? You're disappointed. I mean, you enjoy the roller coaster, but you're disappointed. What's your six-year-old reacting at the very moment, Yasher? He's having an uncontrollable tantrum. He's devastated. Why? Psychologically, you're talking about mental health, right? Why, even though relative to the two of you, is that 2 minutes and 45 seconds of that physical pleasure equal, is your reaction so markedly different when that pleasure is taken away? The answer is, as a six-year-old, they're emotionally invested in that immediate gratification, so they feel despondent and devastated when it's taken away. You are a mature adult. You enjoy the pleasure, and there's nothing wrong with enjoying pleasures, but you're not emotionally invested in it and feeling devastated when it's taken away. So what's the nimshal? A kokosh cake is a roller coaster in your mouth. That's what it is. It's 45 seconds of a thrill, but then it's gone. In order to change relationship with kokosh cake, we have to divorce ourselves emotionally from the importance that pleasure has. Not that the pleasure is going to go away. Again, we're not going to fool ourselves. The ingredients aren't going to change. Our taste buds aren't going to change. So when those 2 weeks, then the reaction of that great thrill occurs is not going to change. What can change? How important is that pleasure to me? And if that pleasure comes with a cost, because I go on that roller coaster, I'm all sick and I'm green, I'm thrown up and I'm, you know, useless the rest of the day, well, maybe it's not a good idea for me to get on the roller coaster. If I'm eating that kokosh cake and I'm having diabetes and heart disease and heart, you know, high cholesterol and hypertension and sleep apnea, right? Well, maybe it's not a good idea for me to have the kokosh cake. It's called making a decision, called processing. It's called self-maturation. And that's what I had to do. I was a 38-year-old mature adult. I ran a care organization in Boston, Massachusetts, Asia Torah there. You know, the name of Baruch Hashem, and I let Tamita, you know, a great, you know, situation going on. So I fancy myself a relatively mature person with a very immature relationship with food. So that's what we have to grow. And now here's the thing. I actually enjoy my eating more now than before. I get those pleasures from the bumper cars, from different excitements that don't have the consequence. And also having boundaries, Coach Menachem, with physical pleasures actually maximizes those pleasures. It's called learning to become a connoisseur in physical pleasure in life, not a glutton, not an indulgence. And you know what? That's the definition of Kedusha. What's the Ramban say in the beginning of Parshas Kedusha, Menachem? Kadosh Asmecha ba?
Mutalach.
Exactly. And what does he say is the definition of someone who's not a Kadosh? A Zolel. An overeater.
Amazing.
Okay, everybody, let's go to the closing segment. First of all, big thank you to Ellie and Don for coming on tonight and giving us their precious time. Again, a very important topic tonight. We really appreciate it. I really feel like we covered a big chunk of it. Again, we'll get to you in a second. I'll explain. But there's a lot more to talk about. Maybe we'll do a part two. But, you know, this is like one of those things, like we do Shalom Bayis, marital relations and stuff that need constant reminders and that rejuvenation of chizuk of to do it again and again. So hopefully we'll do it again. Again, tonight's share is 207. If anyone wants to join the WhatsApp community, please WhatsApp me at 732-314-1710. And I'll send you the link. You can also go to MenachemBernfeld.com and sign up for his emails of the programs, the replays. Again, every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. on this Zoom ID. Different topics, different discussions. Please join us next week. The guest is not confirmed, but hopefully within the next few days, Menachem will send out an email. You can check the statuses, and we'll post on the community chat who's coming on. But every week is amazing, so please come. Don, you're invited also next week. Everything is recorded. It's MenachemBernfeld.com. Please email coachmenachem@gmail.com. If you want to hear this on the phone line, the number is 732-305-9011, 732-305-9011. You could listen to it while you jog as well. If anybody wants to be in touch, let's do Ellie first. Ellie, if somebody wants to ask you a question, somebody wants to meet you, how do you work? Where are you? How do they get in touch with you? What's your cell phone number? What's your address? What's your social security number?
info@soveya.com. S-O-V-E-Y-A, info@soveya.com, 732-578-8800. That's the best way to reach me, either the, you know, email or, that's the phone number, the office number. And we're here, office in Jackson, work with clients regionally, nationally, overseas via Zoom. So the only limit is, just bring your desire and willingness to be vulnerable to the table and to change.
Do you have a WhatsApp motivational group?
Not a motivational group per se. We used to do groups, but most of my work now is either one-on-one or with families, and we also have a corporate wellness program that we're really investing most of our time in. So it's in the context of businesses.
Okay, Menachem is going to put in his email all their contact information, so you'll get an email. Somebody just texted, I don't know about my long-term plan, but tonight I'm skipping my midnight snack. Don, somebody, how do you work? Do you work regionally? Do you work only locally? How does somebody get a hold of you?
Yes, yes. You can reach me at 732-330-2422. Our website is pinnaclefit.net, pinnaclefit.net. And my email address is donallardi@pinnaclefit.net, donallardi@pinnaclefit.net. And we're here for one purpose, to get you guys results. We're here to do personal training, fitness coaching, online coaching. Everything that you need to get you to the goals that you're going to reach, we're here for you.
Okay, amazing. So again, thank you to all the advertising sponsors for promoting us. We're going to go to the closing segment. I'll go first, Menachem, and then we'll go Ellie, and then Don is going to throw the closing pitch. So I just want to say, again, thank you for tonight's program. Thank you guys for coming on. My goal tonight was to really, just really put out the knowledge of, you know, everybody wants to look good and everybody wants to fit into the suit. I said in the beginning, but ultimately we're talking about a much bigger picture over here. It's a picture of general mental health, picture of general feeling good, mood stability, not being running after the food. I feel like half the times when I eat, when I go to a parlor meeting where I go something, you look at the food that smells good. You're eating it. While you're eating it, you're not even really realizing what's going on. Like, you're not even tasting it. You're so busy talking. You're like swallowing down like thousands of calories. Like, you're not even like enjoying the bite. It's not, you're not even having mindful eating, as we call it. And what ends up happening, just from my experience, is what I'm seeing and why I think it's so important, is that there's such a lack of knowledge of what we need to eat, what's healthy. The second we hear the word diet, it's like freaking out. We rather go into this like starvation mode and everything is restrictive. And it's like, we feel it's not really long-term. We know we could do it, you know, for 30 days, for 60 days, till we squeeze into our suit. And then we go right back into our old habits because it's so much more comfortable, so much more easier. And what Ellie said is true. We say this about with Tesla cars. It's like, when you have a normal car, you want to drive to California, you get in the car, you're going to stop in gas stations, Tesla, you have to figure out where I'm stopping, how I'm charging, how many miles. There has to be a game plan. You can't just jump in the car and drive 400 miles or wherever you're going. Same thing with eating. You got to like a plan, whether it's going to be the Shabbos meals or the Yom Tov meals, whatever it's going to be. It's got to be thought out. Okay, I'm eating this, I'm eating this. You're going traveling. It's complicated. It's not going to be easy, right? We want to do whatever we want, but ultimately you got to figure out a plan that's going to work, that's going to be reasonable. But the real thing is also the physical health. It plays such a big part. We don't want to see it. We know it a little bit. We don't want to realize the reality. We'd rather just say, yeah, it's going to be good. But ultimately, all this not healthiness and not moving, 20, 30, I don't know, some people are lucky, 40, start getting 50, 60, it starts bringing on all these health problems. And you enjoyed all those years, but you're just sitting by a doctor, insulin, shooting yourself up. And it's just like, for what? Like, do the work, be healthy, feel good about yourself. Again, nothing's guaranteed, right? Plenty of people, you know, anything can happen to anybody, but we got to do our shtadlus, right, John? We got to do our shtadlus. We got to work it, and we got to try, but we got to live in the reality also. So I feel that's important. I feel it was a great conversation tonight. So much to talk about. And if we slowly do those small steps and do what we need to do and be aware of it, we can make those steps. It doesn't have to be the end of the world. It doesn't have to be, but there's got to be reality. So. Hope everybody enjoyed tonight, and hopefully we'll have more on this topic coming on. Coach Menachem.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Ellie. And I think this is step number one, just talking about it. A lot of people, they don't want to talk about it. It's going to be good. Let's not worry about that, this part. But first you got to put it on the table. It's not that easy. Sometimes you don't like what you see. But that's the first step. You bring it out, you put it on the table, and I think that's what we did tonight. Just talk about it. And I think we have one customer already, not going to eat his midnight snack, which is amazing. You know, a little bit of change. But, it's like the body is, the example is the body is the car, and you're going on a 5-star vacation, and the car has problems, and this, the engine, and that. It's not going to work. Hashem put us in this world with the body. We got to take care of the body so we can serve Him. Do what we need to do with, till 120. But we did hear a lot how it's connected with our emotional well-being, coping mechanism. And many, many of us, those emotions, they're so, call it craving. It just pulls. And you're like, there's nothing you can do now. You just gotta eat. And just to become aware of those emotions and to find the different mechanisms, the different things to cope with your emotions, and it shouldn't be food. Not always easy, but again, realize, see it, look at it, feel it, see when it happens. And then you gotta come up with the idea of what we heard tonight. Drink a cup of water and think. Not easy. But hopefully, after a few days, you get used to it. So Hashem should help us all. You know, this is part of health, emotionally, physically. He should help us, give us the koyach, find and das. We should be able to see the right thing and do the right thing so we can feel good with the self-control. You wake up in the morning feeling good. You go to sleep at night knowing you did the right thing in this aspect. And we should have amazing, amazing feedback results like we heard.
All right, Ellie, let's go.
Don, it was an honor sharing this chat with you. Usher, thank you so much for facilitating, and Coach Menachem for your insights. Anyone who's contemplating, going on a diet or, starting it again, I just want you to ask yourself one question. Challenge yourself with one question. What's going to be different this time? If you lost weight, times and time again, we put it back on. Just ask yourself the question, what's going to be different this time? Nothing changes if nothing changes. Okay, that's number one. Number two is the guy who's going to, not have his midnight snack. That's tremendous. Everything begins with the first step. So I'm going to give you three guarantees. Ready? People, what's your guarantee for success? I'll give you three guarantees. Number one, when you wake up tomorrow morning, you're not going to regret it. We never regret doing the right thing. We always have the charat and the remorse when we ate that cake. Oh, I can't believe I did it again. But you never regret doing the right thing. I guarantee if you stick to a plan, no matter how uncomfortable it is at that moment, but you work through it, you're not going to regret it. Number two, you're going to feel good about yourself. right? You feel good. You woke, none of us wake up in the morning wanting to be mediocre, wanting to fail. We all want it to be great. And when we succeed, when our actions are consistent with our priorities at the end of the day, we feel good about ourselves. And we physically feel good when you wake up in the morning, not bloated and with a stomach distended and all those carbs and all that fat and that food in your stomach. And number three, here's the kunst, everyone. I hope you're sitting down. It wasn't as hard as you thought. I guarantee you, when you look back and say, I didn't have that snack at that moment, you think it's overwhelming? No, it's not a catastrophe. When you walk through it, you realize it wasn't as hard as you thought. The perception of the degree of difficulty, 99% of the time, is greater than the actual degree of difficulty. And the last point I want to end on is when we have to have proper boundaries, not boundaries for the sake of just restricting ourselves, but proper appropriate boundaries in life is what allows us to grow and to succeed and to move. We want to embrace boundaries, even when they're uncomfortable. That's the duality of embracing something that's uncomfortable, because that's what's going to cause us to grow. And it's actually an incredible word by the Kedusha Salevi, Rav Levi Mibra Ditchev. He says, what's the definition of tzidka? Someone wants to be a tzaddik, a righteous person? Look no further than the Aleph base. What's the GPS? What's the guide path toward tzidka? It's the letters that precede it. Samech, Ayin, Pei, Tzadi. There you go. What does that mean? Samech is the only letter that's completely enclosed, a boundary. Put a boundary around what? Next letter? Samech Ayin. Shmeres Einayim. Guarding your eyes. What's the next letter after that? Peh. Guarding what goes into your mouth and what goes out of your mouth. If you guard your eyes, you put a samech around your ayin and your peh, what's going to be the result? Atzari Tzidchus.
Amazing.
Okay, then. Okay, Don. You with us?
I know, I'm mute. There you go. I'm sorry.
Hey, Don, let's go. The final pitch. That's the bottom.
Yes, yes. Okay. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it comes down to one word: results. You know, I think all of us have a journey in life. And I think at the core of it, as we get older, we start looking at ourselves and start taking a look at what starts having value. And in our sphere of influence, or actually in our sphere of our lives here, and when it comes to your body, you know, like one of my clients said, it's a benishmartam. You know, we have a responsibility to take care of their body. And a lot of times when clients come in and we train clients, the hardest part is taking that initial step. You know, one of the cornerstones of what our company is built on is three words: desire, commitment, and results. It starts with a desire to be healthy. Desire to overcome some challenges that you might have, whether it's weight, whether it's overcoming an injury, whether it's an underlying condition, whether it's high cholesterol or you have diabetes, whatever it is, it's a desire to take a step forward to become a better you in the realms of health. Then comes commitment. And this is where a lot of clients realize, actually not so much clients, but most people really have a tough time staying committed. And this is where professionals like myself and Ellie and Coach Menachem, we really play a part in really guiding you through that process of creating a game plan for you to reach the goals that you're looking to reach or the results that you're looking to attain. You know, they did a study in gyms and they said that 75% of members that go to gyms don't get results. They go to the gyms year in, year out, but they never really see the results that they're looking for. 25% of those members that do get results, 90% of those 25% of those members that get results are working with a fitness professional. So whether it be a nutritional coach, a dietitian, a personal trainer, a mental coach, having that professional next to you to guide you, to direct you, to help you, to create that game plan. But staying committed, knowing that you're not doing it on your own. You have someone there that can help you through. You have those two words coming to you and coming to pass, you'll get the results that you're looking for. So have that desire to be healthy. Stay committed to the game plan. You do those two and you'll get the results that you're looking
for. Beautiful.
Cool. All right, Ellie, Don, thank you guys for joining us tonight. Everybody really appreciated it. They felt it was just clear, down to earth. Again, people, some things we know, you don't. Some things you spoke about, people know. Some not. But again, just all inclusive, very deep. And hopefully people listen to this now and in the future, and they take a rein of their health, the mental, the physical, their eating, their exercise, and they do something positive about it. Whichever road and path you go down, just do something. Sitting here and saying it doesn't work for me, and this doesn't work, and that doesn't work, and tomorrow, that does work. My son tells me the best line, my three-year-old. I told him, okay, tomorrow. He says, today is tomorrow. So today is your tomorrow. Let's do it. Everybody have a great night. Take care. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Kol HaLashon, a whole world of quality content.